Oh shit. We are live right now with my man Ollie Bulldog. He's not on the camera yet, but just before we get started, I just wanted to say, did you hear that sound?
Yeah.
Is that sound happening in the fucking, I got a lot of things. I hope this is not broadcasting. If that sound is broadcasting, it's gonna piss me off. So we are here with my boy Ollie Bulldog, but before we do that, I kind of want to let you guys know, if you're in Indiana, the Drop Comedy Club, Friday, one show, Saturday, two shows, come check me out. I'll be headlining. It should be a good time. That's Friday and Saturday in Indiana. Tomorrow, Thursday the 22nd of 2021, I'll be in Barmacy in Akron, Ohio, opening for my man Neil Rubenstein, and then an Arab and a Jew. I mean, you know, for sure we're gonna bomb. And go Sunday to I'll be at Barmacy again on Sunday also. So Thursday Barmacy, Friday Saturday the Drop in Indiana, and Sunday Barmacy. And that's it. And like I said, guys, I'm broadcasting right now. I'm Mike from Detroit on YouTube, the original YouTube page that I created, the Ed and Mo Show, and MTV Cribs Arab America Style. Right now, I'm still trying to figure out where I'm going to broadcast this. So I've been broadcasting on my Facebook, on this page. I also have another Mike from Detroit YouTube page. If you're on there, please subscribe to that. And I'm, like I said, like you see on the screen, I'm Mike from Detroit on everything. But right now, I'm going to bring the guy who, the day that I met him, I knew we were going to make a fucking hilarious video. And it's a video that amongst Arabs and Arab Americans has been something I was very proud of being a part of, because it touched the lives of a lot of Arab kids. Like, I'm in Hollywood right now, and I'm working with comedians that are in their 20s telling me how when they were kids, they would watch that all the time. So everyone who's ever watched MTV Cribs or the Ed and Mo Show, I want to say thank you for being a part of it. And without further ado, my man, Ollie Bulldog. What up, dude?
Yo, yo, what up, Mike E. Shaq? Mike E. Snacks, Public Yemeni Shaq. What up, baby? Hey!
What up, buddy? How you doing, bro?
I'm doing great, man. Doing great. Always a good time, man, when you're back in Detroit.
I know, bro.
I appreciate you bringing me on.
Let's see. Oh, we actually got six people watching right now. What's up, Ollie Mackey? Of course, Ollie Mackey. And and then we got Ollie Farid, MC. He's like, ooh. I think he is... If I'm not mistaken, I would have to say this kid right here is probably our number one fan.
Not probably. He is the number
one fan. He is the number one fan.
What up? What up, Ollie? What up,
Ollie? What's cracking, bro? We appreciate you, man. We really do. I know you're asking for another reboot of the Ed and Mo Show. And trust me, with everything that I'm doing in life right now, I'm trying to see if I could figure out how to make that happen.
Keep
right
pushing
now, I'm
just... keep pushing them, keep pushing them.
Yeah, I'll keep pushing them. Man, we're so busy, though.
Yeah, man. You know what's funny, man? Life gets ahead of you so quick. And you know what's crazy, man? I still see the MTV Cribs video circulate, right? Mm. And then I look back and I'm like, that was almost 13 years ago.
No, don't remind me, bro.
I know. Just a little reminder, man. But it's like, where does the time go? It's crazy.
You know what, though? I don't know about you, Bulldog, but time doesn't go that fast for me.
Because you know why?
Huh?
Dude, you're always slow motion, man.
What he means is I'm stoned. Higher than a motherfucker. I think part of that, but I think also is because I stay busy.
Yeah, for sure.
I think like from the crack of dawn, I'm doing shit. I'm just constantly doing multiple things and I don't sleep much.
Yeah.
Meaning I sleep efficiently. Like 5-6 hours is all I need.
But you're lucky you're getting 5 and 6.
I know. This guy's really busy right now.
Yeah, lot going on.
He just opened up a restaurant. So this guy is not only a real estate agent, one of the leading real estate agents in Michigan. Using, I mean, people know you now because of the videos we did. And
yeah.
Has it helped? Like, do people like recognize you and stuff?
You know what, man? It's crazy, dude. I'll just give you just a, you know, couple stories. So recently my wife and I, we decided we just want to go on a little vacation, obviously after, you know, this whole COVID situation, just being locked in, you know, the house and stuff. So we went to Cancun and we're at the resort. And I'm telling you, I swear to God, this guy's probably like 6'3", 6'4", bald, tatted up and stuff. And
Arab guy?
Yeah, it was actually a Chaldean guy. And my wife's
fake,
like,
Arabs.
Stop,
the
man.
Fakest.
Stop, man.
You fake.
Stop, man. Come on, man.
Shout out to Paul Elia, bro. My boy. That's crazy. Yeah. Chaldean comedian.
That's what's up. So my wife taps me and she's like, hey, why does that guy keep staring at you? And I'm like, I don't know. And she's like, hey, you say something to this guy? I said, no. Another guy rolls up. Finally, they walk over and they're like, hey, we want to ask you a question. And I'm like, wow, okay, thank God, man. I already know what they want to ask me.
What?
They're like, hey, are you that guy that did the Arab Cribs in the Ed and Mo show? I said, damn, yeah, man. You know? Couple other people on the resort. Here we are. We're in Mexico. You know? Anyways. We're on our way back home. We're in the airport. Right? We're sitting down. We're having something to eat. Couple walks up. They're like, hey, man, we recognize you. I'm like, what's up, man? You know, automatically. There's people you've never seen before, right? Like the most random people. They're like, dude, you're the guy that did the Arab Cribs. I'm like, yeah, you know. My wife.
I did it.
Yeah, what? Well, We did it.
We get it.
You know, my wife, man, it's so funny, dude. My wife is like, dude, you're so full of it, man. She's like, you love when people say that,
yeah,
shit,
bro.
Man, you know?
Your head gets bigger than your belly.
No. Nothing ever gets bigger than my belly. Let's get that clear, man. That's for damn sure. But, yeah, man, listen, it was a great time, you know, and I remember the day you called me. I was actually at the restaurant, at the Tubby's. Mm. It was probably about 14 years ago, mm-hmm. actually.
Mm-hmm.
You said, hey, Mike Masalop told me to reach out. You're the guy, yada, yada, man. And obviously, I got to. Dude, I've never been in front of a camera.
No, you never.
Dude, to tell you, I was shitting. Like, what the freaking hell do we do?
I think because you were shitting bricks before we shot that first ever video together, I think that's partial of why you give a good performance. I think you really care.
Absolutely.
You really, really want. So I remember when I met you for the first time. If I'm not mistaken, it wasn't at the Tubby's.
No, we actually FaceTimed.
Did we FaceTime?
We FaceTimed.
I don't think there was FaceTime back then, cuz. What are you talking about?
No, it was just a phone call.
I'm the one that's high, too. No.
Hey, I'm the one on 4 hours of sleep.
My Mike Masalom and Moose were the ones that like coordinated to getting you. I remember they told me, they were like, oh, we got somebody.
Yeah.
He graduated with us. He's the class clown. We think he'd be perfect for this. I met you. You were driving an Explorer, weren't you?
I was.
It was like beige.
It was the Eddie Bauer edition.
Relax.
Yeah. Well, no. It did. It had the beige trim and all that stuff.
But wasn't the truck beige?
No.
What color was the truck?
No. It was like a burgundy. Burgundy with the base.
Close
trim.
Enough.
I mean, you're there.
It was a regal color.
Yeah.
It was regal. Burgundy is a regal color.
Whatever.
Burgundy is the regal of reds. So I walk up there and you were at the window and you rolled it down and you had long hair at that time. Remember, you had like really long hair.
Yeah.
And you just had this shit eating grin on your face. And I just knew right away, I'm like, this is going to be fucking good, dude.
Oh, yeah.
But it wasn't until we did that first take of you washing the
driveway.
The driveway, which a lot of Lebanese people do. They water the lawn and then they spend twice as much washing the driveway.
Absolutely.
And getting it glistening and clean.
Absolutely.
But when we did that first shot of you washing the driveway in your slippers with the socks on,
it was game.
Once I did that first take, and you like did the accent, because you wouldn't do the accent. I kept telling you, can you tell me what the accent's going to be like? And remember, I directed you. I was like, the day before, I was like, here are some things I want you to say.
Yeah.
Cheese.
Yeah.
You know, I have the government cheese and this, that, and the other thing. Guantanamo Bay.
Yep.
And I loaded you with a bunch of like ammo.
Absolutely.
And I told you the night or two nights before, I was like, I want you to meditate over these.
Yeah.
I want you to find funny ways to say them. you're a fob, you're a boater, and you know, let me hear the accent. And you would like blush. You were like, oh, I can't. Yeah. And then I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? He's like, no, you're like, don't worry about it, man. When the cameras roll, I got you. Yeah, I got you.
That's what's up.
And I was like, are you sure you got me? And you were like, I got you. And I was like, all right, dude, I guess I'm just going to have to find out once I hit record.
Yeah.
And when we hit record, you transformed into this fucking dude. And I don't know if you remember, man, I had to like, I was shooting it.
Yeah.
And then as soon as we hit, I said, you know, cut.
I remember that. I was crying. I remember that. I was like,
this video is going to be hysterical, bro.
For sure.
So it was like two things came together really well, man. Like we had a great idea. We had a great approach to how we were going to approach this MTV Cribs.
Yeah.
The basement.
Sure.
You know, the last thing was the garage.
Absolutely.
I love the garage too, because the way we shot it, the garage was like a present.
Oh, it was.
Right? It was physically like a box. You don't even know what you're going to get 100%. Until it fucking opens up.
I wasn't expecting any of that. I wasn't expecting it. So here's the crazy thing.
You weren't expecting it.
No, I wasn't expecting the chandelier and the tiled floor.
We didn't let you in there, I don't
think. No.
We just let them trick it the fuck out.
That's it.
Smoke a bunch of hookah.
Yeah.
They had two refrigerators in there.
They did. You know what's funny? Actually, I swear to God. Dude,
and then what do? We put the fucking, we put the air fresheners everywhere.
Yeah, right on the chandelier. Moose's mom's house, obviously, right? And obviously, Hassan and I are really good friends, man. And it's funny because every once in a blue moon, like I'll go back to the house and dude, what's crazy is that nothing's changed.
It's the same.
It's the same.
How long ago?
13 years ago.
No, but how long ago did you go back?
Oh, I was there probably maybe 7 or 8 months ago. But dude, it was crazy. There's more now, but nothing has really changed.
Mm.
You know?
There's more shit.
Yeah, but dude, but Moose's mom, man, dude, it was perfect.
Her house was perfect.
And the crazy
You know
thing
my favorite part?
Yeah.
My favorite. And I'm
I already know what you're going to tell me.
This is why set designers, people who do set design in movies where they pre-plan, set designers are people who can really get very detailed. Like they make movies so real because they put the minor details in everything.
Sure.
We didn't have a set designer.
Nothing.
We were shooting it on the fly.
Yeah.
And we just had Moose's mom's house.
Yes.
She was our set designer.
Yes.
And the one detail I would have never, ever thought about it.
I already know what you're going to say.
You open up the refrigerator. Doilies
everywhere,
doilies on every shelf, even in the everywhere. It was just doilies. I'm like, that's such an Arab grandmother move.
Absolutely.
Not only Arab grandmother, but Mediterranean grandmothers. Yes. You know, like people from that region, like Europe, they love to put doilies on everything.
I would say a lot of European people, but here's the thing. I didn't think you were going to tell me that. I thought you were going to tell me how she perfectly had the TV in the fireplace.
And well, that one too.
Oh my God.
I mean, the TV
God.
In the fireplace was the best.
Absolutely.
And then when I came down with the Steadicam, like in the editing, I made sure that we passed it and then pulled back right again back and then pass it again just so you can like fucking see that thing.
Yeah.
Like hoop. I mean, the fireplace wasn't even working. It was bricked up.
No,
anyway.
It was bricked up. There was nothing there. And there was no shoot. There was
and in
nothing.
Her mind, she's like, that square fits this square.
That's for the TV. That's where let's put it right in there. Yeah.
Fucking Arabs, bro. But what we're getting to, real estate, right? And we launched into a discussion about cribs because, you know, I wanted to know like how many people start knowing you and stuff, and we've already established that. And now you've opened up a cheesesteak shop.
Yeah. Oh
and
yeah.
Guys, if you're in Dearborn in Michigan at all, like go it's Bulldogs, right?
Oh, yeah, Bulldogs Cheesesteaks.
Bulldogs Cheesesteaks. I had one last. I'm going to get another one. Man, it was amazing.
Thank you.
Because,
thank
like, you. When it comes to cheese sticks, man, there's not that many ingredients. You have to have the best ingredients for those
Absolutely.
Things. And your cheese stick, that bread, bro.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that bread, we bake it in-house daily.
Yeah.
So that bread is never bought. So we get in there about 3 hours before opening, and we just start baking that bread.
Do you ever have to bake bread throughout the day?
Oh, absolutely. Mm. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Sometimes, depending on how it is, more so I would say on the weekend, but sometimes we'll bake like two or three times on the weekend, you know. And the thing is what a lot of people don't know, I started working in the restaurants when I was 13 years old. I actually got my first job at Miami Subs here in East Dearborn.
Miami Subs.
Miami Subs. It rings a bell, man. Yeah.
Of course, man. I remember Miami Subs.
Yeah, so that was the first sub shop in Dearborn.
Okay.
You know, so I was 13. I went over there. I used to go eat there all the time, right? Literally, it was right down the street from my house.
Yeah.
And the owner, Mustafa, used to always tell me, I want to work. You know, I've always worked when I was younger. You know what I mean?
We're Arabs.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember him finally just saying, dude, just come in. I said, all right, great. So I go in there.
Yeah.
First thing he takes me to
is
the fucking meat slicer.
Okay.
Right? And I just see this blade. Hey. Dude, I'm 13 years old.
You got an erection?
No, man. Hell no. Dude, I was fucking terrified.
It's a figure of speech, bro.
Yeah. What, dude, I know. I toned it down a little bit, man. Okay, Who knows,
it's
man?
Ramadan. Yeah, it's Ramadan.
Yeah, Ramadan. Relax. Dude, so anyway, so I look at this thing and I'm just like, no, man, I changed my mind, man. I don't want to work. He says, all right, come on, man. So he takes me to the back, dude. I start pounding out chicken. Then I walk over to the grill and I'm like, this is what I want to do. So, dude, within a couple weeks, man, it's crazy. Here I am, this 13-year-old kid, barely can freaking see above the grill, and this guy's got me cooking food. And at that point, I knew that this is what I wanted to do. Now, fast forward a couple years later, I had a family member open up a Middle Eastern restaurant, needed some additional help. So I kind of went that route. Fortson had a program. So I went to Dearborn High, and then my senior year, I was part of a program called the Wheels In. I'm not sure if you remember it.
Mm-mm.
So basically the Wheels In, it was a full blown restaurant that people from the outside can come and dine in. So it was just a full culinary experience.
At school?
At Fortson. See, not too many people.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I did that for
That's
the,
great.
Yeah, I did
so
that.
So then it gives you the skills as a kid to be able to actually work in a restaurant.
Absolutely.
That's great.
Absolutely. So I did that. It was a year program. I did that. I actually got recruited by a recruiter from the Pennsylvania Culinary School. But I was such a punk, man.
Oh, man. Me too.
Dude, such a punk, right? So the guy actually flew in, right? So I had
to blew meet. It.
I didn't blow nothing. I was such a freaking punk.
That's what I mean.
Yeah,
being a punk, you blew it.
Absolutely.
You blew it just by being a punk.
My father, dude, he just said, you know what, kid? Go do your thing. The hell with you, man. I'm sick and tired of having to come to school every day. Dude.
Yeah.
But you're young. You're young. You're dumb. You think you're the freaking man. You know what I mean? Most popular kid in school, the class clown, just always doing dumb shit. So actually, the recruiter came. He flew in from Pennsylvania, and my teacher at the time, God, I forget her name, but who my mom went in, and we talked, and the guy said, hey, we want you to come, you know, to this culinary school. And I said, all right, great. Like, dude, this is just something I've always been passionate about, you know? And I'm so excited, and I go home, and I'm like, Dad, this is what's going on. He said, no, you're not going anywhere. You don't deserve to go anywhere. So what do you mean, man? You know, like, this is just what I want to do. And I think, listen, back then it was a little bit different, right? How are you going to send your, you know, 17-year-old kid to a different state by himself to try to just, like, figure things out?
I know, but the thing is that you get, like, Americans or Europeans that send their kids out to, like, another country at 14 to do exchange.
No, absolutely.
Or just to go traveling.
Absolutely. And, no, but here we are. We're talking 21 years ago.
Well, not only that. I think our parents were fresh immigrants.
Absolutely.
And when you're in a new country, I think you're a little more guarded.
Absolutely.
Especially considering being an Arab and during that time in the 80s, it really started getting worse, especially the way the news cycle would just keep pushing, you know, hatred towards Arabs and like negative stories about terrorism. Absolutely. Or whatever. So I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I think that's a main thing, because if you were to have kids now, I think you'd be a little more lenient.
Absolutely. Of course. Look, I think at the end of the day, you know, I'm sorry, and I don't want to get off subject, and I'll definitely get back. But
no, it's OK. Man, we flowing, bro.
Listen, I think anybody, and I don't care who it is. Male, female. I know as Arab Americans, you know, our mothers, our daughters are the most guarded, right?
Yeah.
But I think there's so much talent within the Middle Eastern community. Our women are so bright, dude. They are so freaking smart.
Especially Yemeni women.
Especially Yemeni women.
I'm talking about like when you look at Yemeni women, I swear, when you look at the Yemeni population, 9 times out of 10, the men are they're in the basement doing acid and destroying their brains with this drug.
Oh, you're funny, man.
But it's true.
You can say that.
You know, but I'm serious. Yeah. But then when you look at the Yemeni women, they're all scholars, man.
They're very, very, very smart. So my whole thing is this. Don't hold anybody back.
Yeah.
Don't hold anybody back. You know, like it's crazy, right? Like, for example,
I'm right there with you,
listen,
brother.
I hate politics. I don't want to get into politics. But you're in it now. Yeah, well, whatever. But when you look at some of the politicians, right, you're starting to see a lot more Muslim politicians, right?
Ilhan Omar.
Yeah. You know, you got Rashida Tlaib. There are quite a few other ones, right?
Mm-hmm.
But even here in our community, we're starting to see more people like city council members. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got, you know, some Arabs running for mayor and stuff like that. We have a Arab mayor in the city of Dearborn Heights. I think it's the first time ever. But anyways... Dude, that can be your son. That can be your daughter. Don't hold nobody back.
Yeah, but do you think we kind of do have a problem holding each other back sometimes?
You know, I think...
Because this is a big gripe for me too, man. Because there was a documentary I saw years ago after 9/11. And the guy was following this Muslim preacher. He's kind of like one of those televangelists that go around... giving the how Christian televangelists will go around, they're like, and they just preach the word of God.
Yeah.
Right? So he's like a popular one of those guys in the Middle East.
Yeah.
He said this thing that was so perfect as to what you said. He said, he goes, the guy asked him, he goes, what's the most heartbreaking thing that you see as you travel to all these Middle Eastern countries and Muslim countries? He goes, the saddest thing I see is that in every country I go, the women are the scholars, but they're chained to the kitchen.
Well.
And I was just like, whoa, man. Yeah. And I really do think, like, you know, like what you were saying, it was like, you know, sometimes we do hold each other back, but especially like the females. It's like, if, you know, we just, and but I'm seeing it more in our community, and I'm seeing it more in other places where we're being more open to that.
Absolutely. Look, and
it's great to see.
Yeah, times have changed. Obviously, you have third generation, you have fourth generation Arabs, right? And look, at the end of the day, with all due respect, I mean, I'm Lebanese, you know, but I'm American first. Like, this is where I was born and raised. This is what I know. You know, I can't go back home and I'm sure I can adapt and adjust. You know what I'm saying?
But you don't want to.
No.
This is home.
It's nice. Absolutely, right? So now you have your third generation and your fourth generation, right? So at some point, right, we have to adapt and we have to allow our children to spread their wings and fly, right? I think we're just overprotective.
That's what I'm saying.
We're overprotective, right?
That immigrant mentality.
And it's the fear of the unknown, right? So let's say I do send my child off. You know what I'm saying? Is she safe? Mm-hmm. Is she okay? Mm-hmm. What's going on? Is she sleeping at night? You know what I mean? Is she being bullied? You know what I mean? It's just all these types of things that go through your head, right? But there's been so many people that have gone away and they've came back and they've done some really, really great things. You know what I mean? So like for me personally, dude, like I'm all for it. And here's the thing, you know, even when we're doing that whole Crips thing, right? Like obviously I was always the class clown, right? Like comedy's always been something I've always enjoyed, right? Like, dude, I love making people laugh, right? And I'm just this goofball, right? So right after we did that whole MTV Crips thing, you know, it gave me the confidence to say, man, you know what? I can do this. I can get in front of a camera, you know? And then from there, you know, obviously people were calling. I was MCing. You know, I remember I did my first stand-up show in D.C.
I remember that.
What a disaster.
Was it?
What a disaster.
Was that the one with Vincent Oshana?
I don't know. I don't remember. But it was such a disaster, right? Because here I am. I'm like, okay, wow, this is my first stand-up comedy show, right?
And you were hosting.
I was hosting, I was MCing, right? You know, and just kind of doing my little jokes and stuff like that in between. Dude, I completely bombed it. Completely. And I finally looked at the crowd and I said, hey, guys, I got to be honest with you guys. They're like, what? I said, this is my first time ever performing in front of an audience. I swear to God, every one of them got out of their seat, started clapping, going nuts. And I just said, listen, there's no more jokes for the night. We're going to keep it moving. right? But at that point, I realized, you know what? Maybe this is something that I can do. And everybody kept saying, Bulldog, do not be afraid. Go to LA. Move to LA. Go try your luck out in LA. You know what I mean? Like, you're fit for this, right?
I've been trying to tell you that from the day one.
And here's the crazy thing.
And you're like, no, real estate.
Here we are, dude, 13 years later. I'm still seeing the same people. People are still doing the same shit. You know what I mean? People are still living in the same freaking houses. It's the same cliques and the same crews hanging out. Nothing has changed. And the reason why I bring this up is, guys, anybody that has an opportunity, do not be afraid. You know what I mean? Just go. If it works out, it works out. If it doesn't
work out. Why didn't you go, though?
It's just, you know, the fear of the unknown. You know, the fear of the unknown, you know, obviously, and I know this might sound crazy, right?
Bulldog, so I'm telling you right now, and I've said this before,
yeah.
You would blow the fuck up. I mean, listen, you didn't even go to Hollywood.
Yeah.
Okay. And you still got work in movies.
Yeah, absolutely.
You got absolutely. A few movies. You got the eye of some producers, and yeah. They put you on some little small roles.
But yeah.
Small roles like that are still big.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially for being able to pull that from over here.
Absolutely.
Not only that, you're not even trying.
Not even trying.
You're not even trying, bro.
I know.
I've been fortunate to get in some movies too, man. You know what I'm saying? But you know, I'm working.
Yeah.
I'm making the things happen. I've just been trying to tell you from the get-go. And the thing is, with you, it's still not too late, bro.
No, for sure.
You know?
So here's the cool thing. I mean, obviously, you mentioned this producer. Obviously, did a couple movies, couple TV shows. One of the last TV shows I did, I'm not sure, obviously, with the COVID and all that, but I was on the set with Wesley Snipes, Denise Richards, Robert Davi, Lil Romeo, just to name a few. And it's funny because a couple years ago, I was actually in Tyler Perry's studio. So this producer and I, we were working on putting this whole like Arab comedic sitcom together. And we went back and forth. And you're right. It's like I did all of that from being here without even trying. And it's funny because obviously one of the guys, I think it was an assistant producer to the main guy, this Hollywood guy, is a Lebanese guy that works for him. And when the guy was mentioning putting the show together, he said, hey, you gotta watch this guy on Arab Cribs. Well, it goes back to Arab Cribs, you know. You know, but you're right though, man.
And, that's how I got work on in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Do you know how I got on Hollywood, working in Hollywood? Did I tell you that story?
You didn't tell me that story. Let's go ahead. Share it with the audience.
Okay.
Share it with the audience.
It's because of the videos that we did. So after MTV Cribs, we made the Ed and Mo show, which was kind of shot like a reality TV show, right? I'm just letting the audience know if anybody knows. Shot like a reality TV show. I made sure to approach it. I studied reality TV shows.
Yeah.
And I tried to make it feel like it was a real reality show about these two losers in Dearborn that are trying to start a business. Mind you, we came up with the Postmates idea.
Stop.
We came up with Uber Eats and Postmates.
Stop.
I remember when me and Mike McGettigan were sitting down and writing this, we started thinking, we're like, what is like really something that everyone would want right now? And I remember we were talking about it. We were like, if time goes on, more and more people are just going to be lazy.
Yeah.
And they're not going to want to get up to go to the store to get like cigarettes.
So crazy.
And then we're like, yeah, well, if they'd started that, what would they call it? We get it. But anyway, so I did that, and then we put Tariq Salamasi as the bad guy.
Yeah.
And he's a real guy from our hometown who is a boxer who was on the reality show The Contender. I ended up going to Hollywood to visit, to sort of see, am I going to move here? Maybe I can get a job. I really wanted to work in TV. 2 weeks there, nothing. I got to leave in like 2 or 3 days. I post something on Facebook. I was like, oh, LA has been a good time, heading back to Detroit in a couple of days. Who wants to hang out or whatever I posted, right?
Yeah.
Tariq sends me a message on my phone. You're in LA? And I'm like, yeah. Why didn't you tell me? I'm like, what are you, my dad? I don't know. Why do I got to tell you where I'm going and coming? He's like, hold on a second, bro. I'm gonna get you in contact with the producer of The Contender. That's what he tells me. Then like 20 minutes goes by and he's like, Hey, bro, this is the number to his assistant. He said he'll meet you tomorrow.
Wow.
Lunchtime. Set it up with his assistant.
Nice.
I was like, oh, this is great. Set it up. Next day, drive to his studio. He's like working on a TV show already. This guy's so cool. He takes half hour out of his hour lunch break just to chill out with me.
Nice.
So we go in his nice little office, man. It's over. It's looking like out his window. All you see is nothing but palm trees. You can see the Hollywood sign is like right there, yeah. Man. You know, a kid from Detroit, I'm feeling, man, this is where I want to be. Me and this guy sit down and talk, Bulldog. Instantly,
okay.
Like friends.
Yeah.
We didn't even talk about business. We didn't talk about, you know what we talked about? Girls. girls.
Oh, man. Who doesn't love traveling, talking about girls? I hope my wife is not watching this.
Traveling. You know, we just bonded.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. You know what? You were just being real.
Well, I always try to be real.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
You know, not try. I just think people from Detroit are real.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
So, and this guy's real as fuck.
Yeah.
Okay. And we sat down, and after we got done talking, we're shooting the shit or whatever. All of a sudden, he's like, hey, man, I really saw your stuff, you know? And he was like, that was, like, really good. And he's like, very interesting, man. He's like, you know, you made it look like a real reality show, whatever.
Yeah.
He goes, yeah, I thought it was pretty funny. And then at the end of the meeting, Bulldog, how's this? Look at the way the universe works. 5 days before I met this guy, some kid from Dearborn who was in Hollywood was trying to write a movie about a military guy,
yeah,
Arab, and he wanted to call me for pieces of my story.
Wow.
And he was going to be working with like a big writer.
Yeah.
And I told him, I remember I was too shy to tell him, I don't want to give you my story.
Yeah.
Because I want to do that.
Yeah.
And in the middle of the conversation, he could tell. He was like, I don't know, Mike. He goes, I sense that you're being reluctant. He goes, what do you want? And I remember I couldn't say anything. And he's like, Mike, what do you want? He goes, I'm telling you right now, when it comes to being in Hollywood,
yeah,
you need to say what you want.
Sure.
And that'll get you places faster, is what he told me. And I said, well, I don't want to give you my story. And he was like, well, that was great. He goes, okay, fine. He goes, I respect that, whatever. He goes, see how easy that was? And then he gave me that advice again. He's like, I'm telling you, Mike, while you're in this business, state what you want.
Yeah.
At the end of the meeting, as the meeting is ending, in my head, I was like, I just want to fucking work
with
this guy.
Yeah.
I don't want to fly on my plane tomorrow back to Detroit. I want to stay here.
Yep.
This guy, Adam Bryles, gets up. He's like, hey, man, I got to get back. He goes, great meeting you. When you're back in town, let's hang out. And I was like, all right, man. So he shakes my hand. Bulldog, I couldn't let his hand go. And then I looked at him and I was like, give me a job. That's exactly what I told him. Yeah. He just started laughing. He was not expecting that.
Yeah.
And then he was like, what? And I was just like, dude, I'm supposed to fly out to Detroit tomorrow. I don't want to go.
Yeah.
I want to cancel that flight and stay here and work. And then he goes, you're too qualified to be an assistant. I go, I'll take it.
Yeah.
So I wasn't a production assistant on one of his shows for about a month and a half.
Nice.
Just being a gopher.
Yeah.
Running around.
Absolutely,
you know, just
man.
Doing
That's
whatever.
How it starts. Yeah, yeah.
How cool is Adam? After that show wrapped up, he walked right up to me. He's like, dude, I really appreciate your hustle, man. He goes, you really, really hustled. And he goes, you made the operation really smooth. And he goes, you're way overqualified to be a production assistant. He goes, after I saw what you did.
Yeah.
He goes, next show that I work on, I'm going to think about you as producing episodes.
Nice.
Writing is what he said. And I was like, okay. 3 months goes by. I get that job with the Fung Brothers in New York. Remember?
Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
For Lion TV.
Yeah.
So the Fung Brothers got me a job working on that show. As soon as I fly back, I swear to God, I wasn't even back in my mom's house for 2 days. Adam Bryles calls me. He goes, I'm the new producer of the hit show Swamp People on History Channel. He goes, are you ready to move to L.A.?
You know what?
And all that came from the shit that we created.
That emotional. Yeah. And I remember that. I remember that. I remember talking to you one time. You're like, dude, I'm moving to LA. And I'm like, you're doing what?
It was like out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere.
It was like, I'm moving to LA and in 4 or 5 days I'm out there.
You know, but listen, that kind of comes back to what we were talking about before. Opportunity. It's out there. Yeah. It's out there. So look,
I just wish you would seize it more.
Yeah, I know.
I think a lot of people watching this feel the same way.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. But did you listen, man? Dude, life gets ahead of you. Life gets ahead of you, right? It's listen, sometimes artists, obviously we're known as starving artists, right? The money's never right.
You know what I think the real problem is?
What is it?
Arabs.
No.
I think that's what the real, I think we come from a community, especially immigrant communities, not just Arabs, just immigrant mentality. You know, like our family, they were stone's throw from being dead, starving to death, you know, like they came from countries where, and then if they had to work their asses off to get themselves here, the last thing they want to see is us be like, yo, I want to do comedy or I want to do whatever. And I honestly think, like, even in this community in Dearborn, I think there's a stigma.
Absolutely.
There's a stigma.
I would have to agree with you on that.
In our community, that I think that makes some of us within this community subconsciously feel like we can't do it, or if we do it and we fail, we don't want to fail, you know, like that's our type of mentality.
Sure.
And then you got other cultures, whether it's be like white people in this country or black people in this country, or especially Jewish people, they really, really appreciate and they accept art more than I think some of the Arabs, especially here.
Absolutely. You know,
and I think that's what kind of kept you back. And that's what I think kind of kept a lot of people in this community back from actually trying to go out and entertain for a profession.
You know, look, I would say for me,
you know,
look, the first thing, for this is obviously my experience, right? Obviously the first thing for me was just the fear of the unknown, right? Just like leaving my comfort zone, right, in a community that I grew up in, where a friend is next door and then another friend is three doors down and then my other buddy's down the street, right? Obviously, from your restaurants to your mosques to your grocery stores to just knowing anything and everything around you, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. To just packing your bags, mm-hmm, and just going to a completely different state, mm-hmm, that you're not familiar
with. Maybe live in your car.
Right? Very possible.
I know a lot of comedians in LA that live in their car right now.
Very possible.
Just trying to make it happen.
I'm a young kid. Where do I work?
Yeah.
How do I afford, mm-hmm, an apartment, mm-hmm, right? If I have to work, where do I find the time, mm-hmm, right, to go audition?
The thing is, you know what this is called?
Yeah.
A paralysis by analysis.
Sure.
You're paralyzed by thinking too much.
100%, absolutely.
And I think it's the stigma that we have as Arabs. We have to succeed with money. We have to show that we have security. And if we don't have that, you know what I'm saying? Look, listen to me. I'm performing and stuff.
Yeah.
But I've been investing in real estate.
Sure.
Not many comedians I know. I know a few, like Willie Mack, my boy Willie Mack, and a few others that invest in real estate. But like they're all like mostly the comedians, they're black or they're Indian.
Yeah.
They got that minority immigrant mentality where we feel like if we're gonna do it, we need a backup plan. So even I thought like that. You know what I'm saying? I never like went to Hollywood poor as fuck. As a matter of fact, I waited till I was established with some skills and able to get a job before going out there.
Well, see, that's the thing, though. But not everybody is fortunate enough to be in your position, right? Because obviously, before you got into the video editing, before all that stuff, what'd you do?
I was acting.
No, even before that. You were working in the factory, right?
And I was in the Marines before that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I was working in the factory.
So you probably had a little bit of money saved up, right? But a lot of these people that don't have the money saved up, that don't have the support from family and friends, what do they do? It's very challenging and it's very scary to just pick up and just leave.
I think a lot of people are like that, bro. But I swear to God, Bulldog, I'm not going to lie to you, man. When I watch white comedians do what they do in terms of like just go and not have to. So like with Arabs, okay, Bulldog, we have a sense of pride. Sometimes our pride trumps everything. So for example, it's like with the Arab mentality, it's like, oh, man, I got too much pride to go to Hollywood and live in my car and do what sacrifice, whatever I'm going to do to try to do jokes at the comedy store and whatnot. I had too much pride that I didn't start as early as I should have to take those risks.
Sure. I mean, listen, I wouldn't say everybody, you know, what
I'm saying is our community has that. We have this like keeping up with the Joneses type mentality where we're kind of like, you know, oh, you're 25. Where's your car? What type of car you drive? You know what I'm saying? How are you dressed?
Yeah, no,
are you working? Where are you working? Are you making good money? Do you got a side hustle?
Sure.
You know, I mean, like we have this hustler mentality.
Bad and bougie.
But at the same time, I think that I wish that we also in our community was open to allowing artists to also pursue that hustle.
Absolutely.
But I think that a lot of, like, you know, not many Middle Eastern people who want to pursue art will do it because they're kind of afraid of how the community is going to look at them.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. You know what? I want to piggyback. I don't know if you remember this. Obviously, you know, we're not going to take any credit for this. She did it, you know, majority of it, she did it on her own. Do you recall getting a phone call from me? And I said, hey, Mike, there's a counselor at Crestwood High School that wants to meet with me about a girl that's in her, well, she was a counselor, not a teacher.
I already met her.
At Crestwood. Hold on. And she's starting a YouTube channel.
Oh, she blew up.
And she wants some pointers, right?
Yeah.
Here's this Middle Eastern girl, right? That just kind of had this idea and this vision of just wanting to do YouTube. Remember you went in there and you talked to her, right?
Mm-hmm.
Turned out to be Noor Stars.
Yeah.
The number one Middle Eastern YouTuber. Yeah.
She blew up, man.
Absolutely. She's doing her thing.
That's why when I talked to her, I'm like, after meeting her, when I sat down, I remember looking at her after, like, really vibing with her and getting her aspirations and what she wanted to do. I remember looking at her and being like, I don't think you're going to have any problem, girl.
Yeah,
like, I seriously told her, I was like,
you don't need me.
Exactly. You don't need me. Seems like you know what you want.
For sure.
And you're going to pursue the
pursue the hell out of
this thing. So I could just tell.
For sure. I think now we're starting to see a little bit more of that. Right.
Well, yeah. And I want to see even more.
Absolutely.
Way more.
We have so many talented people within our community.
Yeah, man.
Funny, especially.
Yeah.
Arabs absolutely. Are hilarious.
Absolutely.
Man.
But listen,
people who come from pain are typically really funny.
Yeah, for sure. But I'm starting to see a lot more of it, right? Where you do have kids that are starting to put these videos together, right? Where they're working in front of the camera, you know what I'm saying? Where they're getting that work and that hustle, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Obviously writing and editing and producing and doing all these types of things, which is great. You know, I think the worst thing anybody can do, right, is have that talent and not use it.
Like you.
I mean, it is what it is.
Like fucking you.
I know. It is what
it is.
You're
making cheesesteaks.
Selling cheese.
Amazing cheese steaks.
My man.
You're selling homes, man.
Nobody's selling much of anything these days,
you've
man.
You've sold a couple of homes of mine.
And then,
I think I bought a couple.
You bought a couple.
With you.
Yeah, absolutely.
That one I got in Taylor.
Yeah.
That I had, such a good home.
Absolutely.
It's still a solid home.
Worth a lot right now, too.
Boy, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Worth a lot more. But that's just the kind of, like, piggyback, right? So, look, I've been in the real estate industry now for 17 years, right? It sucks now.
Hold on. Do it in Mo's accent. Do this whole thing that you're talking about real estate in Mo's accent, because David DeAngelis said Ali's doing a really impressive American accent right now.
But that's just the joke. The American accent is the ones that I practice. And so people told me after the class and everything that I do a very good job. And I want to show off the American accent so the people, they don't know that Mo, he's border.
Yeah.
That he's American.
And this is the thing. This is the real guy right here,
you know,
guys. This whole time he was acting like an American.
That's it. But nobody, she need to know that.
He, she, they.
And,
there's many pronouns now, Mo.
I'm not used to that yet.
Yeah.
I'm not used to that. I'm not used to the man with the boob.
Yeah.
And he have the thing swing.
Yeah.
I'm not used to that.
Yeah.
I don't know that.
Too much sway in the step.
I don't know that.
Like a woman with too much sway because of the balance.
But even the man.
Balance is all.
But even the man. No, even the girl.
Don't. You better be careful because you're going to offend somebody more.
Okay, nobody take the personal. But even the girl, she shop the boob.
Shop?
Shop.
Shop for boobs?
Shop, chat is the same.
Window shop?
Anyway, so.
Shopping the boobs?
Maybe good chance.
No. Are you saying shopping?
No. Shop. Zakat.
Oh, chop.
Shop.
Chop the boobs.
Shop. And
chop. Okay.
Yeah, it's crazy. But anyways, I don't want nobody to get mad at me because me, I'm not the guy to make anybody mad. So I don't want to be mad.
You love everybody.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody number one.
Everybody's number one?
Everybody here number
one. How can everybody be number one?
Because.
If everybody's number one, then that's not how math works, Mo.
But you know, you have to be like that with the people to make sure the people's always happy. So I told you, you number one. Then I told the next guy, when you're not here,
yeah,
he number one.
Oh, okay.
You know? So, but if there's a lot of people in the area,
yeah,
then I can say you number one. You got to count that. Just one,
what happens
two,
if you're
three.
Like doing a show with a microphone? You're going to have to tell every single person they're number one? Or you got to say, everybody here's number one. And if there's a, if somebody knows math in the audience, they're going to be like...
Well, I don't say at that point, I don't say you number one. I say everybody here number one. I say everybody here number one. Okay. But, you know, so you're talking to me in the real estate.
Yeah,
talking to me, why I not go to Hollywood and why I scare.
Yeah.
There's a problem. The problem, okay. You thinking, okay, I go here, I go do there's a job. She pay me $100 to go, to get on the stage and to speak to the people. But then... You have the rent, you have the food, everything. You cannot live on the money.
Right.
It's crazy.
Right.
And then I do the business now, going for 17
Maybe you
years.
Should do OnlyFans.
No, nobody here ready for this, man.
I think a lot of people are ready for you on OnlyFans.
They're not ready for that. Because No. They get, if more, he used to be fat. He's still a little fat, but not that much fat. Now, more, he's just too sexy.
Oh, you think you're too sexy for OnlyFans?
I can't do that. Yeah, it's not. Yeah.
Oh, no. That's what OnlyFans is about. They want to see you, you know.
So it's OnlyFans. What is...
Are you going to shave your butt if you get naked on OnlyFans?
But I don't even know what that is.
What, shaving your butt?
No, it's OnlyFans. It's people just like they're from my friends.
OnlyFans is like a place where people who are fans of you can come watch you get naked.
Oh my God. No, we're not doing that.
You don't have to get naked.
No, we're not doing that.
But a lot
that.
Of people are getting naked.
No, we're not doing
like
that.
Like a lot of girls.
No, we're not doing that.
Especially during the pandemic.
No, I can't do that. I can't do that.
Look, after Ramadan.
No, this is
after Ramadan.
When the sun goes down.
Oh, tonight.
When the sun goes down.
Then we're going to set up an OnlyFans.
I can't do that.
You have to.
No, you come back, talk to me, May 13th.
That's when Ramadan ends?
It's a different story.
And then we can play those games?
But I can't do that.
You can't do what?
That's against my religion.
Change religions.
I can't do that. Because then to see that girl, she's naked and stuff, is it free?
No, you have to pay. No. But what else? If you get on there, people will pay you.
So then it's going to start a new business?
Yeah.
So can I bring Ed?
I mean.
No.
I don't know. No,
we're not going to bring Ed.
I think Ed would. Really enjoy that though. That's the problem. I think he already has an OnlyFans.
I wouldn't put that past. I wouldn't put that past.
What happened to your accent, Mo?
The people, they need to know I'm American too.
Yeah, but
too.
People with accents are American also.
Who said that?
Look at Mexico. That's North America. Yeah. Technically.
But the Mexico. There's Mexico people.
Okay, but if you go to L.A., there's Mexican people in L.A.
They speak English?
No. No. There's a lot of them that don't speak English, bro. They're still Americans.
Oh, man. Oh, God. This may be the first time I do this here more. Maybe... 7 years.
7 years?
Yes.
Oh, it's been 7 years since you talk like this?
Like that, yeah.
Jason Bacon says, I'd subscribe to Mo's OnlyFans.
Oh, shit.
So you people will pay to watch you.
His name's Jason Bacon?
Show everybody how much hair you got on your ass.
His name's Jason Bacon?
Yeah.
Does that mean he likes the fat?
Probably. He probably really likes the
Bacon.
Fat.
Bacon?
Yeah.
Fat.
Man, you could do an OnlyFans where you're a Muslim fat guy. And you don't eat bacon, but you pour bacon all over your belly.
Oh, my God.
So many people would watch that, bro.
Oh, my God.
I'd watch that.
Oh, my God.
One time, and then that would be it. I would never watch it again. But
my mom, she killed me. My mom, she killed me.
She's not on OnlyFans, bro.
But the problem
what
here...
What if your mom was on OnlyFans? Doing recipes.
Stop.
This is how I beat my son.
Stop. The problem, somebody,
yeah.
He on the fan page,
yeah.
He see me,
yeah.
Then everybody he know.
Yeah.
Then I be the talk in the town.
Yeah, and then you get more subscribers.
No.
Yeah.
You know what's crazy? Mm. Maybe it's a lot of people in the town, they like that shit.
I'm pretty sure there's a lot of people in this town that like that shit.
I think so.
I think the people, like, on our page, on Ed and Mo, like, you get a lot of people who are Muslim, and then they would just, like, comment, and they'd be like, what? He's got tattoos? What? I thought you were Muslim? And people who get mad at you for not being the best Muslim, right? Those people like freaky shit. They're trying to hide it by letting everybody know, I'm this best Muslim that ever lived. Look, I'm telling these people that they're bad Muslims. And people like that, they like to put things up their butt. They don't want anyone to know. Happy Ramadan.
I don't
want to
know about that.
Me neither. Hey, hold on a second. Before let's see if we go to, if anybody got any questions. Everybody got questions for Ali on here. We got 14 people watching. So Ahmed Mahmoud said, man, Ali was one of the first people I watched on YouTube when I was in high school. We used to watch his videos all the time. That's what I'm saying, man. Tell this guy to go to Hollywood. If anybody got any questions, let me see here. Here's a question from David DeAngelis, my boy David DeAngelis, who's also big time Hollywood producer. That guy's been producing reality shows for a real long time. I actually had the pleasure of working with him on Swamp People. He's from Detroit. He also knows a lot of the comedians out here because he used to do Second City back in the day.
What up, Dave? Call me.
Yeah. And his
new number, who this?
His question is, Dogecoin or Freeze Bobs? Which is a better investment, Mo?
Wow.
Dogecoin or Freeze Bobs?
Well, the Dogecoin,
yeah,
you buy that.
Yeah.
Then maybe in the future,
yeah,
you start factory to produce Freeze Bobs.
You gotta like sit back. I kind of lost you in the frame.
Oh,
Mo.
That's okay.
What were you saying?
I said right now get the Dogecoin to get the money.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you become rich, then we open factory to sell the Freeze Bobs.
So we're just gonna, you're gonna create your own fucking Freeze Bobs.
Freeze Bobs.
That's great.
Don't forget about me, Dave.
Yeah, Dave.
Become rich. Don't do that.
Don't do that.
It's recorded.
It's recorded, bro.
Okay. Just like we start a business. Me and my best friend Ed, we get it for you. Then, like a 6 or 7 years, then we see Uber Eat. Yep. Then we see DoorDash. Then we see Postme. And now they have new one, Slice. So me, I'm still living in my grandma's garage.
Right.
But I should be billionaires.
Billionaires. More than one.
Yes.
Yeah.
So when you start the business for the Freeze Bob, don't forget Mo. It's recorded?
Yeah. Okay. Everyone right now is watching this.
Okay, good.
All the bad things you said about trans people, they're going to come after you now.
Ooh.
And he said, there's the answer. Oh, TJ McKenzie says, I'm going to have to come in for a cheesesteak soon. Haven't seen either of you in years. I don't know if you might remember TJ.
Come on.
Who's TJ?
Are you kidding me, man?
Tell me.
Parkour Zombies.
Yeah, hell Parkour yeah. Zombies. If you guys ever get a chance, go on my page, look up, what is it? I think they're either Parkour Zombies or I think I might have called it Super Zombies.
No, Parkour Zombies.
I did, but I think I might have changed the name to get like more people to click on it and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, look it up. We did this awesome video with a bunch of parkour friends of ours and it was great. It was a Halloween special.
Yep.
Where me, you, and Ed are fighting off these zombies that can do backflips and jump off walls and stuff. And TJ McKenzie was the main star in that, man.
Good time, man.
He had that one backflip off of the picnic bench.
Yeah.
And then when he gets down, so many people who watched that were like, that is so terrifying.
Yeah.
Like so many people were like zombies that can run and jump.
Yeah.
To people were so terrifying. I'm not into zombie movies that much. right? Like, it's not like my thing.
Yeah.
But some people watch it and it really freaks them out. And those people, when they saw this, it freaked them out even more. They were just like, they couldn't like take the idea of a zombie that could run faster than you. Yeah,
that was pretty sweet, man.
Yeah.
Dude, you know what I think the unfortunate reality is? You may agree, you may disagree. Dude, I think we were way, way, way ahead of our time on YouTube. Would you agree or
somebody already said that. I already posted what they said. They said, yeah, we were ahead of our time.
Way ahead of our time. You know where I think...
We predicted Postmates.
Oh, my God.
We predicted Postmates, and we created a mockumentary reality show shot like a real TV show based around Arabs in Dearborn. And at a time where everyone was just like, terrorist, 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 terrorist when it comes to Arabs and... You know, way ahead.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. It was a good time.
What, back then? No, it wasn't.
No, I'm saying when we were
It's a better
actually,
time for Arabs now, shit.
No, I'm saying when we were filming the Ed and Mo show.
Dude, I had a blast.
It was a great time.
It was a lot of work.
Too much work.
So much footage.
Yeah.
Like, if people don't know how we filmed that, we shot it like a real reality show. So we would come up with ideas of the scenes.
Yeah.
We would... You know, we've already, me and Mike McGettigan trained both you and Sean to be these characters. We would sit down in the basement, remember? And we train you to talk only in your accent.
Yes.
And we would meet like almost every night.
Yes.
Like after 6, 7 p.m., you'd come in my basement and we would ask you random questions and we try to get you to answer them randomly.
Yes.
And once we got you guys trained into being able to just talk in these characters, and then all of a sudden, like every episode, we would just come up with bullet points.
Yes.
Me and Mike will plan out where the episode's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to go here. This is going to happen. That's going to happen. That's going to happen. Here are these little joke ideas that we have that we're just going to give you.
Yeah.
And then we just roll with it.
Yeah.
And we sometimes will shoot one scene, multiple takes for a really long time. And just improvise and let things happen and surprise us. And then in the editing, I would have to go through all of that footage and try to like a Rubik's Cube, piece all of those scenes together to make it look like it was all one take or one time.
Sure.
It's a lot of work, man, but it was fun.
It's a good time, though. But you know what, though? So much material. You know, it's crazy.
I still have all the footage.
Man, you know what's crazy?
All the footage.
I swear to God, man, I still think about it. As soon as... Sean, who played Ed, right? As soon as Sean and I got together, it was like almost instant. We just transformed into these different people. It's crazy.
And a lot of that was the training.
Yeah.
Sean McGettigan playing Ed was already an actor.
Yeah.
That's how I know him.
Yeah.
Already an actor. He was ahead of you.
Yeah.
He's an improviser.
Sure.
He's one of those guys. I can give him anything.
Boom.
And boom, he can bounce off and come up with ideas and stay in character.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, he's a trained actor.
Yeah.
Trained improviser.
Yeah.
Somebody who's grinding.
For sure.
So
for sure.
Me and his brother Mike were like, how do we get you who has no training?
Zero.
To get on the level of Sean.
Sure.
And then once we got you up to that level.
It was game.
Off to the races,
man.
Yeah,
for sure,
you
know,
then it got to the point that we started shooting so much where I didn't barely have to tell you anything. I would just be like, all right, man, this is what we're doing in the scene. Here are the funny things we're thinking about. Go. And then in the middle, I would stop and throw ideas.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know what's funny? So... Obviously, when we were doing the Ed and Mo show, I wanted more training. So I actually signed up. There was a couple different like acting schools. There was the acting, actor studio, and I forget the other one. But I remember signing up for those. And I walked in, and the instructor at the time, or teacher, whatever you want to call him, instructor, teacher, whatnot, I just kind of looked at him like, okay, like I know this guy, right? So we go and do day one, day two, and the guy's like, hey, come here. I say, what's up, man? He said, you're the guy that did the Ed and Mo show, or you're part of the Ed and Mo show. I said, yeah. He said, dude, I'm going to give you a refund, man. You don't need this class. I swear to God.
Yeah, that's great.
Because we were up there.
Bro, you're natural.
But not only that, though. I definitely credit you and Mike McGettigan. Mike McGettigan a lot, too, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Dude, we made a great team.
The best.
Me and Mike made a great team.
The best.
And then having you guys on the other side.
Yeah. But I'm saying, but you're right, though. But we were getting together 6 days a week, 7 days a week. We were training for it. We were practicing. We were just kind of like figuring things out, right? And a lot of things I didn't know, right? And this is where I'm going to go with this. obviously when to cheat the camera, when to look in the camera, when not to look in the camera, right? So the first time I was actually part of a Hollywood production, it's crazy because when I got the call, right, when I got the call, the guy's like, hey, we want to put this Middle Eastern sitcom together. And it's crazy because it was not quite like Rami. I don't know if anybody's seen Rami that's watching on Hulu. But it was similar.
That first season was great.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was amazing. Kind of like similar to that, right? So it's like you got this Middle Eastern person. So for me, it was different, right? So here's this Middle Eastern guy that's coming from the Middle East to the U.S. that doesn't know a damn thing, but he figures things out from watching like movies and stuff like that.
Mm.
You know, so so that's kind of like how we figure things out. But anyway, there was a lot more to it, though. But anyways, here's where I want to get at. So I go over there. The guy wants to meet with me. I end up meeting with the producer, with the executive producer. And then we just start BSing. So the guy says, hey, he looks at Mike Tadros, who's the, you know, the Hollywood guy, the big time producer on Hollywood. He looks at him and he says, hey, I said, we got to give this guy a role in the movie.
And they wrote a part for you.
And I'm like, no, I don't want to be in the movie. You know what I mean?
Bro, that's
and
great.
And it was in the morning,
yeah.
Right? It was probably maybe like 11, 11:30, went and grabbed some breakfast, yeah. Right? Here I'm thinking, you know, I'm just kind of like tagging along.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, when are you guys filming? They're like, oh, we got to be on set by like 2 p.m. And I'm like, wait, so you're going to write something for me that I need to memorize by 2 p.m.? And they're like, yeah. And I said,
that's
okay.
That's Hollywood, bro. That's filmmaking.
Bro, so I was like, fuck, man.
That actually makes the lines fresh.
Is it one line or is it two lines? The guy said, oh, no. No, no, like we're writing you in. Like, it might be like 2 pages. And I'm like, oh, my God. No, please. I don't want to do it. And then I said, you know what? I said, fuck that, man. This is me like I'm not talking to myself, right?
Started taking it seriously,
and
bro.
I said, dude, the fucking, I've got the training. Mm-hmm. I know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's a reason why this producer wants to write me in. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why he wants me to be in this movie. Mm-hmm. And I remember, I swear to God, dude, fucking trailers everywhere, bro, cameras. Dude, there was a scene where they blew up a car and shit, and dude, I'm like, this is freaking real.
You're on a real set now.
This is real Hollywood production, right?
It's fun, isn't it?
You've got the director's chair. Oh, yeah, the director's chair.
And they treat you great.
Amazing.
They treat the actors great.
Absolutely.
You get a trailer.
It's nuts.
Food out.
Dude, they got me in a trailer, putting makeup on me. They got me a wardrobe.
Everyone's nice and cool.
I was tripping at first, right? So that dude, we get up there. They position me. Boom, ready. You know, action. I was like, oh my God, 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 please God, please God, please God. I froze. I swear to God, dude, I froze. So one of the guys, the actors, God, I forget his name, dude, but this guy's had his own TV shows, big time guy out of Vegas and stuff like that. He's done a shit ton of movies. I forget his name. He just looked at me. He said, hey, Bulldog. I said, yeah. He said, don't fucking overthink it. Do not overthink it. Do you know your lines or do we need to go over the lines? I said, no, man, I know my lines. And I swear to God, dude, take two, boom. I said, man, I'm already trained for this shit. Like, I know this shit. Right?
Yeah, but you were trained for improv.
Correct. Yeah, but now you're like on this Hollywood set.
Lines are different.
They are. They are definitely different.
Improv, it's easy for you to make things sound natural because you're just coming off. But how do you make someone else's words sound natural?
Exactly.
It's a different animal.
Exactly. But then we started shooting and then bam. Right? So then we finished. And I remember talking to the producer.
Did it take a lot of takes to get your shit?
No.
How many takes?
No, two.
Two takes?
Oh, by the second take, it was game.
And you were done.
I got comfortable. Well, no, they shot it. They shot it. And obviously, there
was multiple takes.
Multiple takes.
I get that.
Yeah.
I'm saying is like,
I didn't fuck up.
Okay, good.
I didn't fuck up, right? So then Mike, dude, Mike's such a fucking cool guy, bro. So then I told Mike, I said, hey, listen. I said, I'm a newbie. I've never done this shit before. I said, but sometimes, mind if I play with it a little bit? He said, Bulldog, do whatever the fuck you want to do. I said, all right. And that's why we did the lines, a little bit of improv. Boom. And it was game. And I swear to God, it was at that very moment I said, damn. Like, I can fucking do this shit.
Yeah.
You know? But I did, I think it was two movies. four different TV shows. It's funny, man. I know you and I talked about this, but he was interested in revamping the Ed and Mo show.
Yeah.
We talked about it, man. But dude, COVID, man, COVID effed everything up. Him and I still keep in touch. We still talk.
The only reason I'm not doing the Ed and Mo show again, bro, is I got so much going on.
Yeah, for sure. For sure, for sure.
And I think that if we were to do the Ed and Mo show, I would have to have backing.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can't do it alone anymore.
For sure.
You know,
I did. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work.
95% of the heavy lifting, bro.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Definitely give you the credit.
Of that show,
yeah,
which...
Definitely give you the credit on
which
that.
To me, it was enjoyable because it taught me
all
of the filmmaking skills that I know up to this day.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
Those are priceless.
Absolutely.
So I put myself in that work specifically because, one, I wanted to make a good show.
Sure.
I wanted to create an audience.
Mm-hmm.
Wanted to make a name for myself. And I wanted to learn as much as I possibly can.
For sure.
Best way to learn is to do it.
Absolutely.
But at the end of that road,
it just burns you out.
Well, I had to look back on it and be like, is this sustainable?
Yeah.
Because like Sean, the thing is like, you guys had your own lives going on.
Sure.
And it was really hard to maintain a YouTube show that relied on two characters that were not YouTubers.
Sure.
I could not get you guys to, you know, do your own videos on your own without me.
Sure.
It was hard to rally all that
together.
It was
a lot of work.
And you weren't taking it seriously then, you know? Like at that time, I don't think like you were really taking the pursuing acting thing that seriously in terms of like being in 110%.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that's why I ended up like having to do like my own stuff because then I can rely on myself.
Yeah.
But I would love to do Ed and Mo again, man.
Man,
I would love to do it again.
It's gonna happen.
Just need to do it with backing.
It's gonna happen.
You know,
it's gonna happen.
Oh, goddamn weather alert on my phone. I'm sorry, guys. I gotta try to figure that thing out. But yeah, man, I don't know. Ed and Mo was fun, dude.
It was a good time.
It was a good time.
Hey, you said it earlier when we first started the podcast. It's never too late.
Ali Mackey asks, how is it having your own restaurant?
You know what? It's a good time, man. It's a good time. It's a lot of work. It's obviously something I've been extremely passionate about. I've been debating opening a sub shop for about 12 years now.
I remember you would talk about it.
Yeah.
Even back when we were doing Ed and Mo.
Yeah. It's always something I wanted to do.
Because I remember it was just like you would like, because you love good food.
And I love to cook.
And back then, I remember you said you would want to open up a sub shop.
That's crazy.
And I think you said something about because... the fact that you worked at a Tubby's, too, was kind of like you understood how that business
works. Yeah, so my family actually owns the Tubby's.
That's right.
You know, we're going on almost 16 years of owning it now. But yeah, I managed that. I ran it for like 8 years, you know, along with doing my real estate stuff. Obviously, with real estate, it's a lot of flexibility, though. But, you know, when you're busy. There's really no time for anything but that. But owning the restaurant's great. It is a lot of work. Obviously, with everything that's going on right now, it's just difficult to just hold employees. You know, you lose a lot.
Well, especially that, you know, they're getting
right
that
now with the
money,
with the unemployment. You know what I mean? I think that's the most challenging thing about the restaurant.
A lot of people don't really realize that.
No.
A lot of people really don't realize that, Bulldog.
You know, and
they don't realize how, like, the unemployment is. Yeah, great for the individual, but then it really, I'm sorry, I got to move this cable out of the way. It really screws over the business.
Absolutely.
Because now the amount of people you can choose to work for you just decreases because everyone's getting money.
But not only that, though. So obviously I have a business partner. It's my nephew. It's my oldest nephew's my business partner. And I obviously brought him in because I didn't want to get jammed up 7 days a week, 12, 13 hours a day. I didn't want to do that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you know, real estate's still thriving. Right now, it's just a difficult time in real estate because there's no inventory, you know? So it makes things extremely difficult. So I can actually invest more time into the restaurant. But it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of prep. Obviously, at the end of the day, you know, what people don't realize, in a restaurant, you get people that'll come in, you know, look, a lot of the mistakes are human error, right? I don't think anybody ever says, hey, I want to intentionally F somebody's food up. You know what I'm saying? People will give you 2 to 3 tries before they say, you know what, I'm done with this place. I'm not coming back, you know? So I try to be there as much as I can. I try to constantly train. I try to constantly have my employees make things the way that I make it. And it's as small as putting the right amount of salt, the right amount of pepper on a sandwich, or the right amount of oregano on a sandwich.
That's everything, man. In a restaurant that's important?
Yeah.
Consistency.
Absolutely.
Consistency is everything.
Yeah, yeah,
bro.
Absolutely. And things have been going pretty well. Things have been going pretty well. Obviously, you know, in the city of Dearborn, man, it is like the restaurant capital of the world. God, there's just restaurants everywhere. So when I wanted to open something up, I just wanted to try to keep it as authentic, as Philly as possible. And I don't think we really have much around here, so people are not really used to it. You know, everybody's used to this oversized sesame bread that gets toasted with the chunk chicken, the chunk steak.
And it's supposed to be soft.
And that's what it is. And see, a lot of people don't know that, and it's just different for people, you know. But
you have this hamburger sub.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I haven't got it last time because you told me when I went there for the first time, get the classic cheesesteak sub.
Yeah.
Because that was your favorite.
Oh, yeah.
The classic cheesesteak sub. And I don't know. Should I try the burger one too?
The burger ones are delicious. Yeah. So basically, it's a regular burger. You know,
same bread.
We make it as a loose burger. Yeah, yeah. Same bread.
Everything.
Oh, it's delicious.
That cheese is really good too, man.
Well, it's authentic Kraft cheese whiz. It's not that fake nacho cheese $6 can of whiz. You know what I mean?
No, I don't know.
It's authentic Kraft cheese whiz. That's why you get that taste, right? Nacho cheese is one thing. Kraft Whiz is another.
Is it?
You know, and a lot of people don't actually use it because not a lot of people want to pay for it. You're talking $120 a case for the Whiz, opposed to $30 or $40 for the case of nacho.
Yeah, so your return on your investment is good.
It's there. And I think for me, the most important thing is having people really get that food experience.
Bro, it was quality, man.
Yeah, for sure.
I remember I went in there and I ate that and I was just like, come on.
There you go.
And the thing is, you know, I'm always trying to stay lean.
For sure.
And then whenever I eat something that delicious, and then I realize I want this again, I go, fuck.
Yeah, I know.
Go, fuck, bro.
That's my struggle, man. That's my struggle every single day.
How do you not eat the food that you create?
You know, in the beginning, right, when you're creating something, you're going to eat a ton of it, right? You just want to make sure you're getting your recipes right and stuff like that. But after a while, dude, it's just got to be mind over matter. You know, when I opened up the restaurant, obviously I busted my ass to lose a lot of weight. And when I opened the restaurant, within like 6 months, dude, I was up almost 40 freaking pounds. And it's because the amount of time that I was spending there.
Yeah.
And it's always, all right, just a little bit of fries. Yeah. Just a couple mac and cheese bites.
You don't like time yourself when to eat?
You know what? It's just, it's hard because you're just constantly like, you're constantly moving.
You know what's kept me lean?
What?
Intermittent fasting.
Sure.
And for anybody listening, you guys might want to look into this. I also take metformin. Do you know what that is?
I've heard of metformin.
Metformin is a drug for diabetics.
Okay.
And you know, I geek out on nutrition.
Sure.
I'm even thinking about doing like a Fitness Fridays.
Okay.
Where I go live Fridays and just spit some fitness shit. Because I'm like, I geek out on nutrition.
Nice. Don't bring me on. I'd be the wrong person.
we could probably use you as a subject. Man. But metformin is a diabetes drug. And they're also finding out it slows down aging.
Oh, nice.
So, and then the other plus side to it is now that I'm also taking it I'm not taking it for diabetes. I'm taking it to slow down my aging. But the other side effect is processes carbs and sugars better.
Oh, no way.
So,
I've heard
you know
of
what
it.
I mean?
Yeah,
it keeps the
it.
Fat off the stomach.
I've heard of it. But definitely intermittent fasting. I've been doing it now for going on almost 60 days. I'm actually down close to 40 pounds.
Doing what?
Intermittent fasting.
Well, you're doing the ultimate intermittent fasting. It's Ramadan.
I'm going to be honest with you. Ramadan is not helping.
Like people be like, you know, white people just doing intermittent fasting is like, cuz we created that shit.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
On hard mode.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Ramadan hasn't been helping, man. So I remember the first couple days.
Well, that's because of what you eat afterwards.
Well, it's not that. The first couple days, I'm like, okay, salad, steak. Day two, salad, chicken. Day three, fuck that shit. Dude, we were hitting up the freaking food trucks, hanky panky donuts, freaking ice cream churros.
That sounds dirty, bro.
Hanky panky donuts. Dude, just eating everything, right? Okay, so it's like, I don't sleep. I'm telling you,
That's another reason why people gain weight. Did you know that? Less sleep increases cortisol.
Yeah, yeah.
Increased cortisol stores more fat.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But listen, we're not going to talk about that. But listen, anyways. Yeah,
we should.
Dude, so I'm getting up at like 8:30. You're breaking your fast at 8:30, right? So you're like 12 hours. Okay, no coffee, no water, no food, right? And then you break your fast. You're like, okay, a little bit of steak, a little bit of salad. Dude, after fucking day two, I was like, I can't do this shit no more. But now I've slowed it back.
You just
got to,
you know.
Yeah, yeah. Not doing it. I even told my wife, I said, hey, we ain't doing these freaking food trucks. We ain't doing
You know what else helps?
Huh?
Inulin.
Inulin. Never heard of that.
I-N-U-L-I-N. It's almost spelled like insulin, but it's inulin. My ex-girlfriend turned me on to it. She would get bloating in her stomach. She was like a very thin girl.
Yeah.
So whenever she would get bloating, it would look like she was pregnant. And she had to try to figure out how to do that. And she found out this prebiotic called inulin, which reduces bloating.
Yeah.
But the other side effect, kills your hunger. Oh. So I take a lot of it in the morning and it keeps me from having to like eat for a long time.
Yeah, dude, because you're lean as fuck.
Bro,
man,
I've been really working at it.
I know it's been a minute.
I've been working at it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because as we get older, bro, you got
it. It's harder.
Well, not only is it harder, man, you gotta like pay attention to, you gotta be nice to your body. Because as we get older, bro, how much longer are our joints gonna be able to carry that extra weight?
Dude, I'm 38. Mine aren't working.
That's what I'm saying.
It's rough. It's rough.
That's why it's important that we lose the weight, man. Sure. And for me, as I get older, I wanna be able to move more.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. Absolutely, without a doubt.
Because I used to be Chub Rock for a minute.
Yeah, you were. Yeah, you were. And I know when you pop in, dude, sometimes I see you, sometimes I don't. But it's been a minute, man. It's been a minute since I've seen you.
This is the leanest I've been in a long time.
Big time.
And I've been like retaining my muscle a little bit.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But yeah, it feels good, man.
For sure.
Finally. But that metformin helped. That metformin really helped. If you can get a doctor that can prescribe it to you, tell them that you only want it for anti-aging.
I'm going to look into that.
I think I take 1,000 milligrams in the morning and then another 1,000 at night. Or is it 500 in the morning and 500 at night? But the metformin is my buddy from the Marines just said he takes metformin too. And Bolte, that metformin is on point, man, because they did a study. They did a study, and this is crazy, okay? That's what I love about the latest on science nutrition. Metformin has been out for maybe like, I think, 2 or 3 decades, 20 or 30 years.
Long
right?
time,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then all of a sudden, a bunch of researchers, after like the data's been out for like 20-some years, they started realizing something. They looked at all the diabetes drugs and they found out that everyone who was on metformin lived 20% longer than the people who were on the other drugs.
Damn, that's wild.
And they couldn't understand why. And then they did further research and they found out that it slows aging.
Wow.
It slows down cell death. Like what it does is it fortifies the mitochondria,
okay,
which is basically the shield that sits around every cell in your body, and it's what protects the cell. And not only that, it's what allows it to absorb nutrients properly.
Nice.
So when you increase your mitochondria, you know what you're doing is you're slow down aging, and then not only that, you're able to take in more nutrients.
Nice.
Now the crazy thing about this is that they realize that, and now there's a study that's happening right now. And they're thinking about using that drug as an immortality drug. There are scientists right now that are trying to cure death. And they're studying metformin as possibly being the one drug that will be a part of us never dying.
That's fucking wild, man.
Crazy shit, man.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I got to turn this down. I think I might be running a little hot. Am I? I don't know. Check, check, check. No, I think I'm good.
No, it's, yeah, not too long.
But, yeah, so Bolte, if you're taking metformin, man, keep on that shit. It's fucking good. What were you planning? Let's see. Ali Mackey says, what were you planning on doing before YouTube and opening Bulldog's Cheesesteak? Before doing YouTube? Yeah, what were you planning before we ever did? Like back in the day, When we were young punks trying to fucking do videos and shit.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Obviously, you know, culinary school for me was always a thing. When I knew that that wasn't going to work out, I actually used to volunteer a lot with the Dearborn Fire Department. And there was my old elementary secretary who I used to do a lot of the, you know, different fundraisers and stuff like that with. And I actually started the EMT program. I did that for 2 years, the EMT program. It was at HFCC. And just before I was getting ready to go to Oakland University to start the fire academy, I actually injured my back. So just young and dumb, man. We were playing football. No pads, no helmets, no nothing. I got speared in the back, and the rest was history. That's why you guys see me leaning and moving, three discs in my back. I tell you what, man, it sucks. Definitely not fun. But anyways, that's what I was planning on doing.
Your aspirations were culinary school and maybe then, EMT?
Yeah, well, I want to be a fireman.
You want to be a fireman,
in the city of Dearborn. And
why firemen? What made you think you wanted to be a fireman?
You know what? I think just being around a lot of the different firehouses as a kid, just kind of like riding my bike there and just being around it.
Were you ever socialized with fire people?
Yeah, all the time, man.
So is that what, because you're a very social person. I can only imagine how you were when you were a kid.
Very. Nothing has changed, dude. I'm a big mouth, man. Dude, I'll talk to anybody.
Anybody, yeah.
But you know, but that's just me. That's my personality. That's
but then what was it about the fireman thing that drawn you to? Did you go to a firehouse one time?
No, always. And I used to do a lot of what's it called? I used to help the secretary do a lot of like the fundraisers and stuff like that. And you know, her and I used to always talk about it and dude, I always wanted to do something within the community, man. You know, born and raised in the city of Dearborn, you know.
You're a community guy.
Yeah, and at the time, there weren't too many Arab-American firemen and medics, right? So it's like if they were to get a call, right, to a Middle Eastern home.
At least somebody could speak the language.
Should be there to communicate it. You know, now I think it's a little bit different.
Way different.
Yeah. My mom's cousin's husband was a chief. His brother was a chief. His son works with the department now and stuff like that. So anyways, fast forward. I remember talking to a buddy of mine, and I'm like, dude, this just isn't going to work out. You know, and my father owned businesses and stuff like that. They had the gas station. They had the tubbies and all that stuff. And I just said, no. This isn't what I want to do. You know what I mean? I've got no aspirations of being a freaking gas station owner. You know what I mean? At the time, the tubbies, it just kind of happened. It was a purchase that we had to make. And being, being around food and knowing food, I kind of just jumped into that. But that was later on down the line. So I remember talking to a buddy of mine, and he said, Bulldog, he said, listen, man, dude, people love you. You got a great personality. You have to get involved in real estate. And I said, all right, you know. And I would always just randomly drive around, just look at houses and stuff like that. And I said, you know what, man, I can do this. And that's kind of how it all started. I actually started off, I was a licensed appraiser. I did that for about 4 years. But at the time, the market had crashed. A lot of bullshit was going on, man. People wanted you to do a ton of illegal stuff. You were doing work for people. Nobody was paying. And I said, screw this shit, man. And that's when I got involved in selling real estate. You know, and things have been going pretty well, man. Definitely giving me a lot of opportunities to do a lot of things. You know,
well, I mean, yeah.
The opportunity to open up the restaurant.
Congrats on getting married, bro.
Yeah, man. Best thing ever.
Yeah,
best
you guys make a cute ever, couple,
man.
Bro.
Yeah. She's the best, man. I tell you what, man. As crazy as it might sound, I don't know where the freaking hell I would have been had I not married my wife. She grounded me real freaking quick, man. Real quick, you know. But yeah, hats off to her, man. Dude, she's very supportive in anything and everything that I do.
That's amazing. So,
yeah, man, it's a good time. It's a good time.
Hey guys, I have a segment that I'm trying to do. I want to do different segments on this. I have a pun. I call it, you know, Public Yemeni number one, which basically means public enemy, right? Public enemy, public Yemeni. I'm just playing off on words like that. And I started this podcast because I'm one of those people that really likes to speak my mind. And I kind of go against the grain of what people expect me to be. You know, I mean, I'm a United States Marine, Arab American Muslim, and I can't stop eating bacon. So, you know, I'm like a contradictory within a contradictory within a contradictory. And yeah, this is one of those podcasts where I'm just trying to start. And I want to bring some interesting people on here. The last episode, I did it on Facebook this time, and I only did it on Facebook because I'm trying to see what platform I should really stay on. If you go to Mike from Detroit on Facebook, you can see the last episode. I had my trans friend on there, Pink Fox. She's hysterical. And this is one of those podcasts where it's not a Muslim thing. It's not an Arab thing. It's everything. But I want to focus on, you know, comedy, politics, and of course, sex and relationships, you know, because I really like talking about relationships with other people. Sometimes it gets dirty, depending on the guest. Some people just want to keep it clean. And I'm the type of person that likes to, go with the flow. So there's a hotline that I have, 313-246-3727. Leave a text on there or a voicemail. But keep it general, because I don't think we'll be able to get to any of them today. What I'm thinking about doing is getting a bunch of these questions that we would just tell any random guest whenever we get into the sleeping with the Yemeni portion, where we start talking about relationships. And since we're talking about like your wife and everything, man, let's talk about it, man.
Yeah.
Like, how long you guys been married now?
Just a tad over 3 years.
That's great.
Yeah, man. April 8 marked 3 years.
And you like it?
Man, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's great. You know, I think it's, look, relationships are great, right? Sometimes we get into relationships for the wrong reasons. Sometimes relationships just kind of happen, but you kind of know that there's really like nothing there. You know what I mean? Marriage is different, man. You know, when you can find that person that just kind of supports everything you do, that's constantly there for you. You know what I mean? It's a great thing, man. It's a blessing. Don't get me wrong, man. It's not easy. It's not easy. You know what I mean? But
what's the hardest part, you would say?
Dude, is just really just adjusting, right, to like one another. You know what I mean? Now I would say, dude, we just coast. I was like, dude, get the fuck out. Oh, you want to go hang out with your buddies today? No, hang out with your buddies today, tomorrow. Hang out with them Friday. Hang out with them Saturday. Like, get the fuck out. You know, in the beginning, man, it was so challenging in the beginning.
In
right?
The beginning, it was harder.
Yeah, because
usually in the beginning, it's the easy part.
No.
Like, and then you start getting to know each other, and you're like, I want to hit this person.
I got married late. So it's like I spent 34... not 35, 35 years of my life just being free, like coming and going, dude. And when I tell you I had clicks, dude, probably freaking 15 to 20 clicks at any given time, right? Dude, I was never home. I was out on about 7 days a week, right? And it's like all of a sudden, like you meet this individual, right? And you just click. And it's funny. I always say this to my wife. She's like, dude, shut up, man. You were never that popular, dude. But dude, I was like,
you're very popular.
Yeah, but
you're a socialite.
Exactly.
No matter what room you go into, your goal is to make everybody love you.
100%.
That's absolutely your thing, and absolutely, you like to make people laugh, absolutely, and you like people feel good.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're a socialite.
And it's crazy, because let me tell you how I met my wife, dude. So I was talking like 3-4 different girls, right? There was just nothing really serious, but just, you know, we just pick up the phone, talk, you know, and just kind of like do your thing and shit. But do you remember my buddy called me, and he said, hey, Bulldog, I want to go grab a cup of coffee from Starbucks. So he worked at Real Estate One. I'm at Remax. Literally, it's a 2-minute drive. And I said, no, man. I said, I'm not ready for that, dude. I'm busy. I got a lot of shit. He said, no problem. Dude, he calls me like 3 minutes later. He's like, yo, I'm in the parking lot. And I was like, all right, fuck it. We're going to get some Starbucks. So we get to Starbucks, and my wife at the time was there with her friend who happened to grow up in my neighborhood, who I haven't seen in probably 10 years. You know, man, I'm, oh, my God, you're so beautiful. You still look the same. You haven't aged, blah, blah, blah. Who's this? Oh, this is my friend, Miriam. Miriam, what's up?
Is that what you launch into? But, oh, you're beautiful. Whatever. You know, haven't aged.
Yeah, just small talk, you know.
Lie to your face.
Yeah, whatever, you know.
You're not fat.
But you know what's funny, dude? So we sat down. Dude, 30 minutes goes by. An hour goes by. 2 hours go by.
Just flies.
3 hours go by. I kid you freaking not. We sat there for 4 hours. But, dude, just the conversations we were having were freaking amazing. I don't remember them. But I was there for... Yeah, but I was there for 4 hours. Yeah. I mean, we talked about stuff, but I don't remember.
I think that's a problem.
Yeah.
Most men have to fucking work
right?
On.
We forget a lot of shit.
Sometimes we're not good listeners, you know?
We'll get into that in just a bit. But anyways, dude, so I remember getting in the car and I looked at my buddy Mo.
I don't know what we were talking
Yeah. But we, whatever, dude. We just talked about a bunch of shit, though.
Everything,
fuck, I mean, we're
sitting
down.
Everything she said, you were like, yeah. You look beautiful. Yeah. You don't look your age. Yeah. You're not fat.
Yeah, of course. But, dude, I remember getting in the car, and I told my buddy Mo, I said, hey, I'm going to marry that girl.
Yeah.
He said, Bulldog, shut the fuck up, dude. You're not going to marry nobody, dude. It's not even what you're looking for. You know what I mean?
What's not what you're looking for?
Well, no. I mean, she was just scarf.
She wears a hijab.
Like it's just different. Yeah. You know, some of the other women I've dated and, you know, talked to and stuff like that. It's complete opposite, right?
But even before you met her, I remember me and you had a discussion. I was like, what type of woman would you want to be? A woman that has not a hijabi, a woman that has a hijabi? And you said, you wanted to date a girl that had a hijab. That's right?
At the time, I wasn't looking for that, but...
I can remember me and you talked about before you met her.
Yeah, yeah. But anyways.
Yeah.
So I said, no. I said, Bulldog, man, just stop. Dude, and I remember, dude, I'm like, what the fuck was her Instagram? You know what I mean?
You didn't get her number?
No, I didn't ask for that. But dude, come on, man. It's Bulldog at the time, right? Like, I'm fucking walking around like I'm the fucking man, right? But I knew she wouldn't be a hard person.
What does that have to do with not getting her number?
Because I just got to play hard to get a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, is that how it works?
Yeah. So anyways, but yeah, dude, I remember, Drew just fucking sliding in. And that's just how it started, man. It was great, man. Just
that's good,
the
man.
The company was good. Everything was good.
The energy was good.
It was
you
great.
You felt comfortable.
100%.
When you meet those people where you feel like you don't have to have any guards up, whatever.
Zero.
You're just being yourself.
Zero.
The goofy laugh you have, you don't mind nothing. Expressing that. You know how when you let go, sometimes you can get a little giddy.
Yeah,
really nice when you can get around someone like that.
Dude, it was. I felt so freaking comfortable around her. I swear to God, man, it was just. Weird, man, you know, but I just knew. And then it happened. Obviously, she turned out to be my wife, you know. But anyways, so, you know, being engaged is one thing. Being married is another. You know, obviously for us, you know, Islamically and culture and stuff like that, you're not going to move in together even if you're engaged, right? So even though you're spending time with each other, at the end of the night, you're going home.
She's going home,
right? So you're not together 24/7.
That kind of bothers me.
Well, I mean, it is what it is.
No, what I'm saying from my preference, like to me, it's like I want to live with the girl before even thinking about marrying.
Yeah, I mean,
but those the rules, you know.
Those are the rules.
Them the rules.
Exactly. And some of them follow them. Other people don't.
But with this girl and her
family, I follow the rules.
Them the rules.
Yeah, I follow the rules. Right. So it's different, right? Because when you go home, right, you can hit up the boys, like, yo. It's 10:30, it's 11 o'clock, where are we at, what are we doing, where are you guys hanging out, you know what I mean? And guys hang out, you know. The majority of the time we're sitting in a fucking garage or in a basement playing fucking cards or playing video games till 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, but that's just what we do, you know. Yeah. We're not out looking for trouble or doing any, you know, stupid shit.
Yeah. It's just a hang.
Yeah, but then now, right, like you get married and now you live together. You're sharing the same bed. You're sharing the same bathroom. You know what I mean?
You got to deal with whatever noises they make, whatever noises you make, and how this person closes the cabinet. It's like, you know, whatever it is that kind of annoys you, now you are living with that.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Like the dumbest shit.
Dumbest shit.
Hey, I've been married now for 3 years. I've been with my wife. I want to say, well, we've probably been together now for maybe 4.5 years, but...
Including meeting and then marriage is what you mean, right?
I still, to this freaking day, I cannot turn the fan on in our bedroom.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I swear to God.
Divorce her.
Oh, my God.
Game over. You're a fat guy.
Oh, my God.
You're a heater.
Oh, my God.
You're a walking heater.
Oh, but yeah.
You should get like a shirt that has fans inside of it.
Oh my God, man.
They probably sell those too.
But like that's the thing that we fight the most.
like a little, Amazon probably has it. If we look at it right now.
I guarantee it.
There's like a little thing that you wear. It's got a bunch of little fans.
100%.
A Chinese person is making it right now. They're watching this.
$14.99. But there's definitely a lot of things that are challenging. But I would just say overall, look, guys, I think the most important thing, listening, right? Spending quality time, not being selfish with your time, you know, paying attention. Attention, dude, women love it. They love it. They love it. They love it. They they just want it. You know,
yeah,
what I
mean? You got to give them attention. But I mean, I always feel like it's a delicate balance. You can't just be giving them nonstop.
No, no, definitely.
Some guys fuck it up where that's all they're doing. Yeah, like they drop everything for their girl.
No.
They stop talking to their friends. They stop playing video games or whatever they liked before just because he thinks that he needs to grow up for her. You know what I mean.
No. Listen. Balance is the most important thing, right? And it's just to kind of like piggyback on what I said earlier, right? So like the first year, it's different, dude. They want to spend as much time. You know what I mean? You have to do everything with them. But then after a while, dude, it becomes toxic. Becomes very toxic for the relationship. It's like at the end of the day, like you said, dude, you still have friends. Forget about me. You know what I mean? How about all like your girlfriends that you used to hang out with and the things that you guys used to do and the restaurants that you guys used to hang out and just having like movie night, you know what I'm saying, or hanging out at one another's house? Why does that have to stop? That shouldn't stop.
No.
Just because you get married, that doesn't have to stop. Now, same thing with me. You know what I mean? Every Thursday, I used to get together with the guys. You know what I mean? Sundays, you know, we used to get together, right? And Friday night, we used to get together. It was like three nights where the guys would get together, you know? Why do I have to stop doing that after I've been doing this shit for 10 years now? These are guys that I grew up with. These are guys that I know. This is just our thing. Why not all of a sudden, because I got married, I have to drop that and stop that?
Exactly.
Shouldn't be that way.
And same with her.
100%.
What's annoying is if you're with someone,
yeah,
and then you become the center of their universe.
No, it's not healthy, dude.
It's too much.
But how long can you put that on, though?
Well, not only that.
How long does that last?
Typically, people like that don't have other things to do, right? And those are the girls where I haven't had too many of girls like this, thank God, but... You would meet people, and guys are like this too, but I only date girls, but like, they constantly text you. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Where are you going?
Yeah.
Why are you out again?
Yeah.
When are you coming? How come you don't text me right away? Oh,
yeah, yeah.
My God. It's don't have your own shit going on.
It never ends.
It never ends. So what you think is that you want that person to have their balance in their life.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the most important thing, see, for me, I knew right off the rip, this is who I am. This is what I do. This is when I see the guys. This is not going to change. Mm-hmm. Right off the rip, I'm letting you know, hey, this is what you're going to expect from me. I don't want to be this person, right? Prior to us getting married, and now all of a sudden we move in together, and you're like, whoa, you're not this person who I thought you were. You know what I mean? No, let me know. I want you to know. If I'm going to marry you, I want you to know everything about me right off the rip. You know what I mean? So you can kind of expect that. Now, don't get me wrong. Now, I mean, you get older, you're working and stuff like that. You know, you don't go see the guys every Thursday anymore. You know what I mean? Maybe every other week. You know what I'm saying? Friday nights. Okay, so you know what? You guys are playing cards and you guys are playing video games. F that, you know, I'm just going to take my wife out. If we get back and I drop her off and I'm not tired, I'll come by. You start to adjust yourself. You know what I'm saying? But dude, you know, marriage, for the most part, is supposed to be like a lifelong commitment, you know, and then shit happens along the way, divorce and stuff like that, you know. But I don't think that's anybody's intentions ever, right? When they're like, hey, I'm going to marry this person, right? I'm going to marry this person and I'm going to marry her for 3 or 4 years. And then eventually I'm going to get a divorce. And then
the thing that,
you know,
I don't,
it's nobody expects that, you know? So
for me personally, the thing that I don't like about the old world way of getting married, that you don't live with the person first before the marriage happens, is because I think living with a person is what really opens you up to who they really are.
Yeah, sure.
Because everyone's playing some type of game to hide some type of something to some degree or another. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's like, you know, what's the hardest thing for me to get over? I can't get over. Like, if I'm dating a girl, is a person who cannot realize that they're wrong. And apologize.
Oh, yeah.
Or at the very least, realize that they fucked up and you can see them working to change that.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It makes a shit ton of sense.
My point is that I'm starting to get to an idea. It's either I'm only attracting those type of girls, like when I actually get into a relationship. I've only been in like the last two relationships. were the only like two real relationships that I tried to make happen. Any time before that, between me and my last girlfriend, was a time of me just staying single.
Are you still in a relationship?
I just broke up with her.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And it's the same thing. It's like I don't know if this is a woman thing.
Yeah.
Or is it the one woman that I'm choosing thing? And it's like, I have women, the last two women, they would fuck up. And it was a fuck up that warranted them apologizing and going, damn, I fucked up.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. And we'll do that again. You know? Instead, it was turning it around and blaming it on you.
Yeah, I'm not going to answer that question.
What do you mean?
I'm not going to answer that question.
You're not going to answer that question.
No, I'm not going to answer that question. Let's just say certain people get in their feelings, and when they do, forget about it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
But I mean, if they're not going to apologize, that's fine. But at least
get over it.
Get over what?
Whatever it is they're supposed to be apologizing for. Just kind of get over it, you know. Just move on.
Yeah, but if what they're doing is trifling, you know? It's hard for me to get over it.
Yeah, no,
it's a little to me.
Yeah,
but you know, to me, that's like a red flag. I'm just like, whoa, wait a minute, you fucked me over, right? Or you like did me wrong,
yeah.
Right? I don't feel good about it.
Yeah,
I need closure.
Yeah,
you know, like usually, if you're like in an argument with someone, there needs to be closure
for sure.
But when the person you're trying to get closure from keeps turning the tables around about you.
Yeah, but then at that point, it's just time to go.
That's exactly it.
At that point, it's time to go.
That's what I'm saying.
Look, that's when balance comes back into place, right? And just kind of giving like your personal space and just kind of giving me like my freedom and shit, you know? Dude, every situation is different. I just think at the end of the day, I hope I'm not going to piss anybody off. But I would just say, at least for me, dude, I'm just a fucking man at the end of the day. Dude, I don't give a fuck about the small shit. You know what I'm saying? I don't give a fuck about problems. Dude, if we have a fucking argument, get the fuck over it and just keep it moving. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but how do you get over it if the other person is not going to admit or realize they fucked you over?
But then at that point...
You know, because in relationships, you know, if you're with someone that does you wrong... You don't want to be with someone who does you wrong, right?
Absolutely.
You want to be with someone who does you wrong and realize, oh, fuck, I did you wrong?
Yeah, I fucked up.
Fuck, I'm fucked up.
Yeah, my bad. No, absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
Because if not, then you're just this, to me, you're just this pretty girl that I feed.
100%.
What the fuck are you?
No, definitely. I can agree with you on that. I can agree with you on that, you know. But then again, dude, it's just to what degree, right? You know, I got to tell you, in marriage... Dude, it's funny, man. Like, we fucking fight and argue over the dumbest shit. You know what I mean? You were supposed to take the garbage out 4 hours ago. Why is it still sitting on the side of the stairs?
Well, yeah, that.
I'm just saying it's just dumb shit, yeah, right? Yeah. You know what I mean?
That's nothing.
Those types of things you get over, though. Yeah, but it depends on to what degree and to what caliber.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I'm talking about, like, you know.
If it's serious, well, then that's why at the end of the day, even there's people, if they're dating boyfriend, girlfriend, that's when they split up, they break up. And even married couples, that's when divorce comes into place, yeah. Right?
Now, see, that's why I don't even get into it with these girls.
Because
they showed, like, really good, you know?
In the beginning.
And then we would live together for a little bit.
And then they switch shit
and
up.
And then that something would happen. And then you would confront them. Yeah. And then you'd be like, oh, this person doesn't have my back. They don't give a shit about
you. Yeah. See, depends on the person. Depends on the person. Mm-hmm. But see, but that's the beauty about not giving a fuck, right? Because if, let's just say right now, right, like I'm married. And I start to realize all these different types of things about my wife, right? And shit's not fucking changing. It's very simple. Yo, let's go. I'm out. I'm getting the fuck out, dude. I'm not staying in this fucking relationship if it's toxic.
Oh, yeah.
I don't give a fuck if I'm married.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't care how much my mother loves you or how much my father loves you or how much my siblings love you. I don't care how much I love your family, your mother. It's you and I.
Yeah.
If this fucking relationship is toxic, I have to deal with this shit every single fucking day. Guess what?
Exactly.
The fucking hell with everybody.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
I think that's the biggest fear, though, with a lot of people, right? I think there are a ton of people in toxic relationships that really shouldn't be in them, you know? But
I think some people are in relationships that are toxic because sometimes they're insecure.
Sure.
And they feel that they can't get anyone else.
Yeah.
Or they feel like if I leave this person, I'm going to be single forever.
Sure.
I'll never find another person. Sure.
Again, it's always the fear of the unknown. You know. That's the fucking killer, man. That's the dagger.
That's why I'm really good at breaking up.
Yeah.
Like if it's like that, toxic.
Yeah, for sure.
If you're making me feel like shit and I can't get any closure from your wrongdoing,
yeah, there's no point
because you're just going to keep changing them, whatever.
No point in being around. No. Yeah, have a nice day. Keep it moving. On to the next one.
Exactly.
On to the next.
But to me, he said, I'm not answering that. That's hilarious. To me, it's like I kind of want to talk with more guys about all kinds of different categories about relationships, because I think the more I start talking, you'll start finding patterns.
Sure.
You know? And sure. I think finding patterns is how you like.
That's why I didn't want to answer the question. Yeah.
I don't know what that means, but okay.
I tell you that off air.
We'll get a question right here.
Yeah.
It says, this is the thing. Somebody said, utilize TikTok to post snippets and then post full videos on YouTube. Somebody's just telling you might as well just get on TikTok, you know? Do something like really simple, like dance.
You
would have to do something every day or every other day. Sure.
You know what's funny, speaking about TikTok and speaking about those videos? So obviously for Ramadan, our hours have changed at work. We open from 6 p.m. to 2 a.m. just because there really isn't much foot traffic, you know, for lunch and stuff like that. So I just found it wasn't worth it. So last night, I get a group of guys from West Bloomfield, right? Obviously, everything in Dearborn's open late, you know, and it's just a fun experience. It's just a fun food experience as well, too, with like the different food trucks and vendors and tents and stuff like that. Anyways, the guys walk into the restaurant and they're ordering, and the guy just stops and he just stares at me and he just starts laughing. He's like, dude, no fucking way. I said, what? He's like, dude, you're the YouTube guy. I said, yeah, I was the YouTube guy, you know. But it's funny, but he's like, dude, you really need to start doing YouTube again. And I said, well, I don't know if I want to do YouTube. He just said the same thing, dude. He said, hey, why don't you just get on fucking TikTok? Just get on TikTok, do some dumb shit, quick recording every single day.
I'm thinking about getting on TikTok too, but that's usually not necessarily my style.
Yeah, for sure.
The thing is that it's definitely your style.
Yeah.
You're very charismatic. Yeah. You like dancing.
We'll figure shit out. We'll definitely be able to figure it out. But yeah.
Okay. I was just checking the hotline. And then we have another question. This is a good question right here. When did you start the Spider-Man collection?
Spider-Man.
You're really big into Spider-Man.
Yeah, huge, man.
You
huge.
Love Spider-Man.
Yeah, I think I started the collection, I want to say maybe in 96 or 97. And the way that started, my cousin and I used to always compete. I used to be an artist. I can't draw for shit. I don't think I can draw a stick figure. It's funny because he kind of moved on. He graduated from CCS, which is a... Center of Creative Studies here in Detroit. Well-respected art school. Moved out to Boston. Big-time graphic designer out there. But anyways, him and I used to always compete. Who can? Obviously, this was always freehand. You know, who can draw the best, you know, pictures and stuff like that. So I remember he actually was at Target with his mom, and he found this action figure. And this is when they started doing like 16 points of articulation with these figures. Now we can start, you know, moving joints and stuff like that with these action figures. They weren't just like solid figures and stuff. And there was a Spider-Man figure. It actually came on a base, you know, so you can put it on the base, you know. You can basically maneuver this.
Is that that big one that you had?
No. It was just a small one, you know. So we used it. And then I remember being at Target. And I was in the toy section, right? And I never cared for toys and shit. But, and then I grabbed another action figure. It was the Green Goblin, and it was like on this glider. And the action figure that my cousin bought, it was like, it was a series of four figures. So then I bought the second one, and then we used that same thing that was on a base. I said, man, this is pretty freaking cool. You know what I mean? I ended up taking them home with me, right? And I remember putting them on my dresser. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. I want to go get the other two. So then I went and bought the other two, right? And then it stopped for a little while, right? And then, okay, come on, let's start drawing again. And I'm like, well, we should start drawing like comic figures and shit. So we start drawing like Superman and the Batmans and stuff. So he got really big. It's so funny. He got really big into like Superman and Batman because he's got a crazy ass freaking collection.
Oh, wow.
It's sick, right? Here we are. We're just like two young kids, right? Like in freaking high school, right? Who love to compete against one another. Dude, they went from the four action figures. Then they released another series, and then it became eight action figures, right? And then I started going on eBay and started searching other things.
It just became an addiction.
Bro, I probably, and I'm not being Arab, I'm not being Arabic when I say this, I probably have maybe 10,000 pieces at home.
Didn't you sell a bunch?
No.
I remember you said you were going to, but you...
I was debating it.
And then...
I can't do it.
So your wife lost that battle.
She did, but you know what's crazy? but let me tell you what's crazy, yeah. Though. She knows there's certain things that I like. For example, Sideshow is one of them. Sideshow makes the most incredible statues ever. But it's funny because when we bought our new house, she bought me a housewarming gift. And it was a life-size Spider-Man made by NECA. So she bought me that. And then she knew that there was this other, it was a quarter scale. It's pretty big, probably a 3-foot limited edition to only like 200 or 250 statues. It was like $2,500. And I'm like, man, I really, really, really want this. And she's like, no, we don't need it, blah, 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 blah. I was like, all right, whatever. One day I come home, there's a freaking huge package on the front door. Now we're talking like several months later, you got to pre-order these things. And it says Sideshow on the box. Dude, I opened the fucking box, and sure enough, she bought me that statue.
Oh, wow. That's
so
nice.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So look, she appreciates it. You know what I mean? She respects, you know, these types of hobbies. Yeah. Like I always told her, like, I'm not into fucking drugs, dude. I'm not into gambling. I'm not into fucking drinking. I don't fucking go out. I bust my ass. You know what I mean? I work hard. I make sure the most important thing, bills are always paid. Money's put away in savings. And then I have my little man stash.
Yeah, man.
You know what I mean? It's my own stash. I do whatever the hell I
can't
want.
Can't lose
with it.
That kid in you.
No. You know what I mean?
I think that's what I was listening to this podcast called Hidden Brain.
Yeah.
It's really good. If you guys are into like really cool podcasts about what how the mind works. And they were talking about how a child laughs 300 times a day. And then when you get to an adult, the numbers for most adults, the average is like maybe one.
Wow.
Or sometimes zero. Wow.
I'll tell you what, man. And the thing is, I think I'm a kid at heart.
They talk about how sometimes we lose our inner child, man. And I never want to lose that.
No way. No way. Dude, I'm still a kid at heart.
Yeah.
I tell people, man, I'm 38. God willing, I'll be 39 in July, man. But fucking side, dude, I'm 13, man. I'm 14. You know, and it's funny, man. Like, I've got the entire back wall. And the sub shop is literally, it's dedicated to Spider-Man. And I've got some of my collectibles up there and pictures and stuff like that, you know. But, you know, as silly as this may sound, dude, even though you're an adult, these types of things, man, dude, they keep you happy. You know, it's funny because, so what I did is I built a Spider-Man room in my basement, in my house. And I swear to God, Mike, sometimes when I'm having a bad day, just go right downstairs, just walk right in. It's the Spider-Man vault. Actually, I started a Instagram page called The Spider-Man Vault. But, dude, I'll just go in there, man. I swear to God, dude, your mood and attitude will go from, like, super fucking shitty to, like, yeah. You know.
Whatever it is that does that for you. You remember that movie Collateral with Jamie Foxx and Tom Cruise? And Tom Cruise flies into L.A. and he's a hitman, and then he and Jamie Foxx is a cab driver, and basically Tom Cruise ends up hijacking his cab for the whole night while he's killing people and doing his contracts.
Yes,
do you remember that?
Yes,
and
yes,
then
yes.
As he's driving, Jada Pinkett was like the girl that he picks up. She's really hot, and they have a really good conversation. And he asks her, "What do you do to escape?" You know, because she's like a high power businesswoman.
Yeah.
And she tells him, and then she goes, what do you do? And then they get to their destination, and then he opens up the visor, and he had a picture of an island a specific island that he really wants to vacation to one day. And he goes, whenever my day is going really bad, when everything feels like whatever, I just put this down and I imagine myself on that beach and everything goes away.
Yeah.
And it was really great because, like, in the movie, like, when he sees Tom Cruise shoot the first person, he, like, pulls it down and, like, starts staring at it.
Yeah. You know?
But the thing is, like, whatever that thing is, don't lose it.
You know, yeah.
Don't and fucking lose that
I
shit.
I think everybody should have something like that, you know, whatever it may be. Whatever it may be. You know, it's like the older you freaking get, man. You know, like I was just telling you, man, dude, art. So it's funny. In my elementary school, I still go visit my secretary, the school secretary, by the way. She's still there when I was a young kid, right? I painted a red wing blackbird in fifth grade that is still hung up in the school.
Oh, wow.
It's still there.
Nice.
When I was in Fortson, I won. They were doing like these ice sculptures and stuff like that. So it was a couple things that I drew. You know, I won those awards. I had stuff hung up in the Henry Ford Centennial Library at Dearborn High. I had a bunch of different pictures and stuff like that hung up throughout the school. You know, art used to make me happy. It's just what I enjoy. But then it's like you get older, and then you just life is fast, man. Like. You know, when you start to like lose out on these types of things that you absolutely love, I think you just start losing who you are as a person.
You know, right? that's one of the things when people are addicts.
Yeah.
That's one thing that they ask. Because when I was in the Marines, I developed a drinking problem really fast because it was new to me to be that free.
Yeah.
And, you know, the guys that I were hanging with, they grew up in families where they could drink, so they were able to control it.
Sure.
I'm some Arab kid away from his family, and I went all out, and I ended up developing a drinking problem. They sent me to rehab.
Wow.
Like, if the Marine Corps sends you to rehab,
you know there's a problem.
Because the Marine Corps was born in a bar.
Yeah.
In 1776. They, like, that was like a, we have a drinking tradition in the Marine Corps. And one of the first questions they sat down was, they asked me, and they were like, what's something that you love doing that you're not doing anymore? And I remember I was like, the gym. And I remember when the psychiatrist asked me that question, it was a question that made me go, yeah, why am I not doing that anymore?
Yeah.
And then the therapist was like, that's because you've transferred your addiction to this drinking.
Something else.
Because now you're not doing that one thing.
For sure.
And then they told me, like, if you go back to working out, they said, it'll make you really happy. And how about you? And they were so right.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as I got back in the gym, everything locked into place.
Sure. You know, it's funny, man. I tell myself all the time, dude, I'm just going to go to the art store. I'm going to buy a bunch of shit. And I'm just going to start drawing again every fucking week or so, every month or so. I tell myself, I've been telling myself that shit for like the last 6-7 years.
You know, bro, you got to do it, man.
Yeah, that's what it is.
You got to
do
it.
Don't get me wrong.
Just
give, you know, there's other things.
You start small. You know what you do? Doodle.
Yeah, for sure.
Have like one little pad.
For sure.
Every day and just doodle something in the morning.
I always do that. Throw it out. I'm always fucking doodling shit, man.
You know, there's this meditative toy that they have, and I've been thinking about getting it, but it's supposed to be like a form of meditation. And you remember Etch-A-Sketch?
Yeah, hell yeah.
So this is like Etch-A-Sketch, but with a brush.
Nice.
Okay?
Nice.
And the idea is like it's supposed to be this like ancient Chinese thing where they would create beautiful art in sand. And then once the art is completed, they destroy it.
Yeah.
So it's only there temporary. So this thing is kind of like an Etch-A-Sketch. And every morning you're supposed to like paint some type of picture with this brush, and whatever you draw on there will be there. But by the end of the day, it's gone.
It's gone.
So I don't know if that's like something up your alley or what.
Yeah, for sure.
Before we go, bro, we've been doing this 2 hours.
Yeah.
I know you got to get going.
Fuck shit, dude. I'll talk for another 2 or 3 hours.
I know. That's what I'm saying. It's crazy, man. Once you get into it,
it's nuts.
The time flies.
It's funny, guys, for the viewers, man. So I told Mike, I said, yo, man, like, how long are we going to do this for, man? 20 minutes, half hour? He said, could be a half hour, could be an hour. One of my viewers, 2.5 hours. They're looking at my phone right now. Holy shit, it's 3 o'clock. That's crazy. We've been talking for 2.
That's why I told you
we got to go for another 2, man.
Easily.
But you got to bring me back on.
Yeah, bro. Especially when I come back, man.
For sure.
I mean, the fans love you, bro. They're like so happy that you're here.
Awesome, man.
Before we go.
Pleasure, yes.
We have a question that came in on the hotline.
Okay.
And it's from Mo.
Ooh.
Okay. And the question is, how does one pull a cutie like Mo Mackey?
Ooh. That's a very good question.
Mm. Say it to the camera. She's over there looking at you.
Oh, this girl?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's a very, very good question. When you see the girl, you look in her eye, and you told her in her eyes the most beautiful thing more ever he see. And then you have to tell her that you work in the gas station, that you are an engineer, and you have to let the girl know that you live in your grandma's garage.
No, she's asking, oh, how does she get you? What does she have to do to get you?
Oh, this.
You're telling her like you.
Oh, it's a very good question. Give me your phone number. That's it.
That's it?
Yeah, give me the phone number.
I got the number right here.
No, I can't do that. I can't do that. Oh, man, you bring me on your podcast to get me in trouble. Oh, man, oh, man.
Any last words, brother, man? I think we should try to wrap this up.
Oh, man, it was a good time, man.
Good time, right? Good time. To catch
it was
up?
Crazy. First time I've ever, well, I mean, I've done other things, but first time on a podcast.
Live? Have you done a live podcast?
No,
this
no,
is live right
no,
now,
no,
bro.
Man, this is pretty sweet, man. It's a good time. It's a good time.
Great, man. This is like, I'm having a good time doing this.
Yeah, for sure.
This podcast has been fun. And like, if you guys are out there, definitely subscribe to this channel and follow me Follow me. It's Mike from Detroit on everything. Actually, no, I'll pull the, oh shit. Guys, I'm getting used to these buttons. Come on, where is it? Okay, well, oh yeah, I ended up having to move it. There you go. Mike from Detroit on just about everything, and especially on Instagram. I'm really, really, really active on Instagram, and I'm going to be posting more of this stuff, and every week I'll be streaming, sometimes more than once a week, and I have all kinds of guests. I'll be posting clips on here, so it goes all over the place. It can go from something like this to something ridiculously crazy.
Yeah,
I could have religious people on. I could have porn stars on. It's, you know, and I'm very curious to like sit down and talk with these people and get in their heads and especially talk to them and laugh and, you know, especially with the sleeping with the Yemeni hotline, like talking relationship with you, man. It was great.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure. For
trying
sure.
to get in the minds of how people look at relationships.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And who knows? I might even get into some politics or whatever, but definitely follow me. Follow my boy Bulldog, Ali Bulldog.
Yes, sir.
If you're in Michigan, please go to Bulldog's Cheesesteaks.
Yep, out in West Dearborn.
In West Dearborn, Bulldog's Cheesesteaks. Start with the classic cheesesteak,
oh,
right?
The Bulldog Whiz, yeah.
The Bulldog Whiz.
Yeah, yeah, the Whiz.
Start with that to get a baseline.
All day.
Right?
All day.
And then he's got like an extensive menu where he takes it to another level.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
But that Bulldog Whiz was amazing,
fire,
man.
Fire.
So good. And so definitely do that. And follow me, Mike from Detroit on everything. Also, I'm a stand-up comedian. I might be coming to your town, MikeFromDetroit.com. This weekend, I'll be in Indiana at the Drop. And tomorrow, Thursday, I'll be at Barmacy in Akron, Ohio. And then also Sunday, I'm back at Barmacy in Akron, Ohio. Other than that, any last words?
Edit it out.
Edit it out. Let's go.
Public Yemeni number one.